Good afternoon. Welcome to our school board meeting. Today is Tuesday, March 30th, 2021. At this time, will everyone please stand with me for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Welcome. I'd like to start by introducing the people here at the dais with me. To my far left, I have Mr. Carl Persis, representing District 4. Next to Mr. Persis is Mr. Ruben Colon, representing District 5. Next to Mr. Ruben Colon is Mr. Ted Doran, our school board attorney. To my far right, we have Ms. Erin Lieben, our agency clerk. Next to Ms. Lieben, we have Mrs. Anita Burnett, representing District 2. On the phone with us today is Mrs. Linda Cuthbert, our chairman, representing District Number 3.
Hello.
Hello, Ms. Cuthbert. Immediately to my right is Dr. Scott Fritz, our superintendent, and I am Ms. Jamie Haynes, your vice chairman, representing District 1. We are happy to see all of you here with us. And for those of you listening at home, thank you. Items for approval today on this agenda are items 3.01, 6.02, 16.01 through 16.05. Public participation times for items on the consent agenda, 6:30 p.m. for items of general interest pertaining to public education in Volusia County. A total of up to 15 minutes will be provided for public comment at this time. Time will be provided for public comment on any action item before a board vote is called on that item. Time will be provided at the end of the meeting for public comment for items of general interest pertaining to public education in Volusia County before items from the board, superintendent, or attorney for discussion, announcement, or approval. At this time, under item 1.02, we have our district vision statement and board member comments. Do I have any board members that would like to speak this evening? Mr. Colon.
Sure, and so I would like to, this week, I'll inform you all if you haven't seen it, some of our Deltona High HOSA students went to the national competition, and some won their national competition and will be going on to the international competition. So we're really proud of our students at Deltona High who participated in that, who will be representing us proudly on the world stage, we could call it. So thank you.
Mrs. Burnett, go ahead.
I just want to welcome everybody back from spring break, and I hope that everybody enjoyed their time. And just want to kind of remind everybody that as we're coming back, if you see anybody that needs help, if you notice anybody that's struggling, just reach out to them and be kind and ask them if they need something and if you can help guide them to the right person to find what they need so that we're taking care of each other emotionally. Thank you.
Mrs. Cuthbert, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Yes, I would. When we come back from spring break, usually this is when seniors begin to go a little haywire. And so I caution and address all the seniors throughout our district, and these are the 12th graders. You still have a quarter left. You still have to get those credits in. We want to see you at graduation, and that's the goal. So as we approach graduation and we are approaching a testing season 2, we can't let up on the end goal, and that is to be successful in the classroom as well as out in the ball field right now. A lot of competitions going on, especially in baseball. And I have to say, good luck to Spruce Creek baseball varsity game. They were highlighted in the News Journal last week, and then right after them, University High School was highlighted. So we have some excellent athletes still in our district. I wish them well. Please stay healthy. Think. So we still haven't gotten to summer yet, So thank you so much. Everyone, welcome back from spring break. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Cuthbert. And I'd also like to reiterate, welcome back from spring break. We're excited that everyone has returned, and we are into the final 9 weeks. And along with, you know, seniors needing to keep in mind they need to finish up their credits and everything, we're also entering the time when assessments are going to start. And having been a classroom teacher previously, along with a mother and a grandmother, what I'd like to say is, parents, this is my message for you right now. Take a deep breath. Just be an encouragement to your children as they head out in the mornings, especially on the days that they're going to take the assessments. Just remind them how proud you are of them and that all you're asking for is for them to just go and do their very best. This is not a time in which to add additional stress onto our students or our teachers during this time. And that's the same message I not only gave to my own children, but also to the children that I taught over the years. Because I used to tell them, this is your time to show off what you've learned. And at the same time, show me as an educator, maybe where you're still missing something, which would say to me, I could do a better job with that. So at this time, as we head into this season, let's all remember to be encouraging of each other and just do our very best. But thank you, and we are happy that you're all here. So we're moving on for item 2.01. Do we have any agenda changes?
No, Madam Chair, we do not.
Okay, then at this time, I'd like to put forth a recommendation for an approval of the agenda.
Motion to approve agenda is presented. Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Then the agenda is approved for this evening. Moving on to item 3.01. Dr. Fritz, you have some administrative appointments.
Yes, Madam Chair, I do. I'd like to ask Dr. Mark Shanoff to come forward. And as Dr. Shanoff's making his way up here, it's my intent to recommend him for the Chief Operating Officer position, and I'd like to share a little bit about his background. Dr. Shanoff is currently the principal at Edgewater High School in Orlando. He has earned a bachelor's degree in elementary education from Rollins College, a master's in ed leadership from Nova Southeastern. He also has an MBA with a concentration in operational management from the University of Florida, and he holds a doctorate degree from the University of Central Florida. Currently, Dr. Shanoff is the president of the Florida Association of Secondary School Principals and serves on the Orange County Public Schools Operational Advisory Committee. He's also been the past president for the Florida Association of School Administrators. Dr. Shanoff has been an elementary, a middle, and currently is a high school principal. And this is what he said about joining our team. He's honored to join the Volusia County Schools team and is looking forward to working collaboratively within the operational services and across the school district to deliver a world-class learning and working experience for our students, employees, and community. I know he will be great.
Yay. Thank you. Thank you. Madam Chair, board members, and Dr. Fritz, I am honored to join the VCS family, and I'm eager to lead our operations services teams as an integrated function to help us meet our vision and our mission. Operations will align our work with other departments, and yes, we will ensure a safe and world-class learning and working environment for our VCS students, our team members, and our families. I want to thank two very important influences in my life that are here. Dr. Leanne Bradshaw, I'd like to thank Leanne for her unconditional love and ongoing support. She's been there for me for just about everything the past 7 years and is the most amazing supporter I could ever ask for. Without her, I am not here. I'd like to thank my supervisor and mentor of the past 5 years, Dr. Harold Border, Chief of High Schools in Orange County, for investing time, energy, and most importantly, belief in my potential as a school leader. Much of what I bring to this position is the result of Dr. Border's influence, especially his commitment to students and his leadership of our high school division. I'm looking forward to getting to work and establishing VCS as a market leader in resourceful, responsive, highly skilled, and timely operations to advance student achievement. Thank you.
Dr. Chanoff, they still got a vote on you, buddy. Have a seat.
Gotcha.
Nay.
All right. We got a recommendation here.
You've heard the recommendation from Dr. Fritz that Dr. Mark Chanoff join our team as the Chief Operating Officer. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Madam Chair, I'd like to make the first motion.
All right, Ms. Cuthbert, you've made the motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? It passes unanimously. Does anyone have something they'd like to say?
Welcome.
Go ahead, Mr. Klein.
Dr. Chanoff.
You can't leave yet.
I'm back.
So I had the opportunity to share some words with him, and I want to welcome you to our community. I tell you what we have is some really, really great people, and I look forward to seeing policies, procedures, standard operating procedures, and things that can help us to be successful as a system. And work as a system rather than a lot of moving parts, not working in conjunction. So I look forward to seeing the work that you'll bring. I read some of your blog posts, and you're definitely, you know, real big on, you know, students and bridging the gap and all of that. So it'll be interesting to see how that translates into operations and the things that we do. So thank you, and again, welcome.
Thank you.
Yes, welcome. And now we'll allow you to exit. But thank okay. you.
You got it. Am I good now?
All right.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
If I may, I wanted to make a comment on the recognitions, if that's okay, which was 4.01.
We're not finished with administrative appointments.
One more.
All right. Dr. Fritz?
When you hired me and you interviewed me, I told you one of the most important things I would ever do is place a principal in a school. With a really high-quality principal, I will have a high-quality school. You can guarantee it. And so I'm very pleased to bring forward Dr. Earl Johnson. As Dr. Earl Johnson comes up here, some people call him retreads when they come back. But I'd like to share a little bit about Earl with you and the audience. Earl actually graduated from Seabreeze High School, which is the school that I'm recommending him serve as the principal. He also, after he graduated, became a math teacher at that school and an assistant principal. And those of you that know him know that he was a very successful principal. He was a principal at Osceola Elementary. He was a principal at Turie T. Then he went up to Flagler and was a high school principal and improved the graduation rates, specifically with great success with his minority students. While he was in Flagler County, he was moved to an executive director position that would be equivalent in our county to a deputy superintendent. So you ask, why would Earl want to come back? So I asked that question, and I got to tell you, I love the answer. He wants to finish his career where he started, making a difference with kids. Yay. And so I got to tell you, I think that's the best. Everybody that serves in a leadership position in the district office, we understand that, don't we? Yeah. Right? So it's with great recommendation that I put forward Dr. Earl Johnson to be the principal at Seabreeze. They got a vote on you, Earl. Don't make the Chanoff mistake. We're going to call that the Chanoff from now on.
Re-chair, that sounds like my career, football career, re-chair. Madam Chair, school board members, Superintendent Dr. Fritz, in the words of Jackie Gleason with the Honeymooners, how sweet it is. to be back home where it all started back in 1978 when I was a student at Seabreeze High School. The reason that when I first attended Seabreeze, I was one of those student athletes who were most likely not to succeed. And because of mentorships and the relationships of the Dick Edsons, the Edgar Scotts, the Don Stallers, those are the reasons that I'm sitting before you today. And I will assure you one thing. The first thing that I will do is develop relationships with the stakeholders at Seabreeze High School and in the community. I will be knocking on doors like I did at every other school that I was the principal at. One of the things that I can say is the ideal team player by Patrick Lencioni. He said that a great leader has to be humbled, hungry, and smart. And smart not in the sense of intellectually smart, smart in the sense of being able to develop relationships with people. I am that guy that is very humbled and hungry to serve as principal of Seabreeze High School. And when I say serve, I am serving all of the stakeholders at Seabreeze High School to ensure we create lifelong learners, prepare them for a ever-changing global society. And we're going to do that one student at a time. And I'd like to end with this. Once a sand crab, always a sand crab.
Board members, you've heard the superintendent's recommendation for Dr. Earl Johnson to become the principal at Seabreeze High School. Do I have a motion?
I move approval.
Do I have second. A... Okay, and I have a second. So Mr. Persis made the motion, Ms. Cuthbert made the second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Anyone opposed? 100% unanimous. Congratulations.
Woo!
Thank you.
Is there any, hold on a moment, is there any board member that would like to say something?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, Mr. Persis.
You know that's where I graduated.
Yes, sir.
All right. You know it's near and dear to my heart.
Absolutely. As is Florida State.
Yes, as you know that is too. And I just got to say that, Earl, before you were a teacher at Seabreeze, didn't you have another job at Seabreeze?
Before I was a teacher at Seabreeze, I played in the NFL.
Yeah, yeah. Earl is really just an amazing athlete, too. And I know he didn't bring that up, but, I mean, you know, how many people can say that? Also, Earl, there's someone sitting behind you that's Ooh. Been rather instrumental in your life and person I know pretty well myself, as does my wife. Since both of us hired that lady right there, you want to... say a few words.
I would like to introduce my beautiful fiance. And Dr. Fritz, I can't, you said retread because I'm coming back. Well, she's my beautiful fiance. However, she was my wife for 25 years prior to us becoming reengaged. And she has always been the backbone of my career. And we're looking forward to reuniting and finishing our lives together.
Yeah, well, yeah, she's an amazing person, as you know, Dr. Fritz. She's a guidance counselor at New Smyrna Beach High School, Jewel, right? And I had the pleasure of working with Jewel when I was principal at Tomoka, and my wife Susan had the pleasure of working with Jewel. And where did Susan hire you, Jewel? At Holly Hill Middle School then, I guess it was, yeah. So we go back pretty far with the Johnson family, and I was as surprised as you when he applied for this job, because I figured he's going to finish his career in Flagler, and you know, it's so rare that you can end your career where you started your career. That doesn't, I mean, what are the odds of that happening? And you starting there as a teacher and coming back as a principal, I know there's not anybody on the planet that's going to have more passion to do the right thing at Seabreeze than you, Earl. And I'm just so proud of you and so happy for you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
So first of all, you owe Mr. Persis a big one because you just saved your marriage. For starters. I'm just saying. And secondly, you know, I've heard great things about you. As you know, we have a mutual friend in Mr. Rogers. And I'm looking forward to, you know, based on what I've heard, you're in the right place at the right time. And, you know, that matters. And then, which team did you play for? Were you a Miami Dolphin?
No, sir.
I'd like to recall the vote because I know there's at least two of us here who are Dolphin fans. So, no, welcome. Congratulations. Yeah. What
Thank
team did you.
You
play for?
With the New Orleans Saints and the Denver Broncos.
All right.
That saves you in my eyes. But I'd like to also say welcome back to Volusia County. And I hope, you know, just as you used to welcome me when you were the principal at Torrey T to come on your campus, I hope that, you know, you don't mind if I stop in to see you at Seabreeze. So welcome back.
Not at all. I would love to have you there.
All right. Mrs. Burnett.
I'd like to say welcome. I'm glad to see somebody coming this way from Flagler versus going to Flagler. So thank you. That really means a lot to us. It means a lot to everybody in the district.
Thank you.
Well, congratulations. Oh.
Miss Cuthbert would like to say something. She's on the line.
Oh, Miss Cuthbert. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Miss Burnett. Mr. Johnson, I have tears in my eyes. I'm so happy you're back, and it's official. Welcome, welcome, welcome. My new podiatrist is just north of Seabreeze. I think I'll be dropping in a couple of times to see you. So, and he's the reason why I'm not here today. I have my foot elevated above my heart. So thank you so much for coming back. And I had no idea that Jewel Johnson and you had any association whatsoever. And that is how professional you both are. That's how wonderful, so charismatic with students. And knowing that you're Miss Johnson is at New Smyrna, I feel like part of you is there as well. So I hope to see a lot of both of you. So congratulations and welcome to Volusia County Schools. Again, it's always better the second time around.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me back.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Don't hang up. Okay.
Dr. Johnson's start date, as well as Dr. Shanoff, will be June 1st. He will be doing some transitioning. I will share with both of these gentlemen. You know, I'd rather hold a horse back than have to kick him in the behind. And both these guys are willing to get going right away. Dr. Shanoff will be setting meetings with each of the board members between now and June 1st so that he can sit down and talk with you, share his philosophy, share where he wants to go and to learn from you. And Earl, you are Earl has texted me 5 times, let me come back. I want to get started with the kids right now. And so I love that enthusiasm. So he will be back here officially June 1, but I've given him permission. I think teachers have a right to know who their boss is, so he's going to go to the hiring fairs and start hiring teachers next year.
Good.
Oh, that's
perfect.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Johnson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Johnson. Moving on, Dr. Fritz, item 4.01, recognitions.
Yes, and we have four today, and I'm going to take them one by one. And then after the first one, I'm going to ask Ms. Rowland if you want to make your way up here as I go through this. But Volusia County Schools, we are recognizing April 5th through the 9th as LGBTQ Health and Awareness Week. Volusia County Schools is committing to building an inclusive environment for all of our students. Our district is devoted to continued and having an opening dialogue in advocacy
for all of our students of diverse populations. We publicly support all these groups. We want to acknowledge that vulnerability, we want to acknowledge their vulnerability while at the same time highlight their intrinsic value and contributions to our schools and community. Most importantly, we strive to empower all stakeholders and establish a sense of belonging that transcends our differences and helps us achieve our common goal of creating lifelong learners who are prepared for an ever-changing society. And I've asked Ms. Rowland to come forward because I'd like us to talk a little bit about this week and some of the work that we've done with our schools and our counselors and some of the work we're yet to do. Ms. Rowland?
Good evening, Vice Chairman Haynes, school board members, and Dr. Fritz. I'm here today to talk briefly about the respect we have for all of our students. They're all inclusive, and we love them all. In reference to LGBTQ, we have developed a LGBTQ support guide to make sure we are not leaving out any of our students because they're all important to us. The mission in our guide states, we promote cultural competency by addressing the unique needs of all of our students. Our vision is for a safer and more productive learning environment for all of our students. In accordance with state, federal, local policies and laws, our district will continue to provide students, teachers, administrators, and our community members the resources needed to make sure our schools are safe and as inclusive as possible. As educators, we value the worth of dignity of every person, have a devotion to excellence to provide an opportunity equally for all. Our goal is that every action and speech of our students, teachers, and administration should and would be inclusive and model non-discriminatory efforts. We have support from every level. There was a virtual conference that was sponsored by Equity of Florida and the leadership teams from around the state of Florida. There were 7 of our members that attended that conference, starting with our school board member, our equity officer, our school counseling specialist, assistant superintendent, coordinator of elected programs, and our college and career counseling coordinator. So we have support from the top level all around our schools to make sure all of our students are included in every single way. We want to make sure we have a good representation to show how important inclusiveness is to our county. We train our principals each year. The principals are trained by Ms. Anne-Marie Wren, who is our equity specialist. She trains the principals. They, in turn, train their staff at each of their schools. Our counselors are trained each year by our counseling specialists to provide them with tools that they can support our students, all of them inclusively. We have diversity clubs at each of our schools that meet on a regular basis to make sure all of our children are taken care of. Our district policy specifically prohibits harassment and discrimination based on sexual orientation, gender expression. Policy 509 prohibits harassment. Policy 525, policy against bullying and harassment, and Policy 507, the non-discrimination and equity, educational equity. We train our personnel, specifically our counselors, as this is often who our students will come in contact with, and how they respond is often and very important. We train them to, when a student decides to come and confide in them, we train them to offer support. Be a role model of acceptance. Appreciate the student's courage. Listen, listen, listen. Assure and respect confidentiality. Demonstrate understanding, acceptance, and compassion. Be prepared to give a referral for resources and or provide emotional support. Remember, when these students come, they have not changed. They are still students. Our goal is to treat every student with dignity and provide every student with an equally and equitably positive school experience. All the students at Tim Blue County School belong to each of us.
Thank you, Ms. Rowland.
Mr. Flynn.
And so, Ms. Rowland, thank you for that. No, thank you for that. And I had some feelings that I wanted to share about what happened last week, and I had no idea what you were going to bring forth today. So some of this may seem a little bit out of place because that was a beautiful and much needed explanation and context to what this resolution really was. It was unfortunate that at the last board meeting, the resolution came forth, which what I believe to have been little context for all 63,000 students and their families. As a school board member, I serve every family with our actions and, most importantly, with my vote. That what you just said is what was missing at the last meeting, in Ruben's opinion. I'm only speaking for myself. I think we missed an opportunity to bring awareness to the special needs that our LGBTQ students face. It was an opportunity to bring forth awareness to the fact that 39% of our LGBT students have considered attempting suicide in the past 12 months. It was an opportunity to bring forth awareness that 71% of our LGBTQ plus students reported feeling sad and hopeless. Now, this is before COVID, so I can't even imagine, because I think all of us have experienced some of this at some point with all this craziness. Less than half of our LGBT students were out to somebody at school. Okay, that's the reality. And so, you know, a lot of what you spoke about today is what was not spoken about that day, to bring awareness so folks can understand what that was. We didn't talk about the fact that 71% of our students reported discrimination. Okay? All we had was a resolution that was brought forth with no context. And so I blame myself in part because it was my understanding that we would bring the context, but I wasn't clear enough in what I expected as to be the context. And so, you know, that really hurt. And, you know, for a lot of the folks that say, well, you know, this school may not necessarily be the place, 43% of students come out with their sexual orientation with their teachers and guidance counselors. Okay, or they share it with them. Or the vast majority share it with their classmates, whether they're gay or straight. These are the things that we needed to do to bring awareness to what we were voting on. It was an opportunity to talk about the vision, which you all heard today, which is a vision is a safer and more productive learning environment for all students while recognizing the unique needs of our LGBTQ community. We didn't talk about that. We didn't talk about principals and support staff and the training and all of the things that we do regarding the language that we use and language that could be hurtful. Last week, I met with a group of folks, and they shared the things that I said that were hurtful, that served as a dagger, potentially, to our students. I didn't know. I didn't recognize that. Okay? And I'm sorry for those that I offended, because that was not my intent. We missed the opportunity to share the training and the measures that we have in place to support our transgender children. We missed the opportunity to share how we have increasing the numbers of counselors in our schools. We're increasing the number of touch points where we're intentionally reaching out to students, not waiting for them to come and tell us what's wrong, versus to be there for them and say, what can we do for you? We missed the opportunity to, I'll just leave that there. And so it was mentioned that the resolution last year passed 5-0. And I will share with you, for those who didn't realize it, that resolution came to the board on April 14th, recognizing the week of March 23rd on a consent agenda item. There was no discussion. It was 3 weeks after it happened. Our students were out of school. It was April 14th. We were waiting for April 15th to find out whether the governor, would be bringing our kids back to school. Okay? Now, that resolution, unfortunately, I don't think many people even knew it was there. And so, with that being said, and I appreciate that you brought it forth, Volusia County has been known as a county that is inclusive. We're on the cutting edge, okay, of ensuring that our children are treated fairly. We have these training mechanisms. During a public comment, there were some folks who came up and said things that were hateful and not true. Okay? And I could assure you that none of those comments swayed my vote on the resolution. My opposition was solely due to the vagueness of the resolution and the fact that and how it would impact every student in our community. Every parent deserved to know what this resolution was going to mean. And I think you did a very eloquent job today at bringing that forth, and I thank you for that. So, to be clear, you were very clear, but I've got it written down and I wrote it and I rewrote it three times. This week is recognizing LGBTQ plus Health Awareness Week. And according to the superintendent, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Fritz, there will be no activities planned as that is not the intent. The purpose is awareness only. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Thank you. Okay. On that day, and I have it kind of repeated here, but on that day I fundamentally opposed with it moving forward without a clear understanding of how it would impact our students. Whether you supported this resolution or were against the resolution, every parent deserved the right to know what that resolution was going to mean. Now that I've been able to add what I felt was much needed context, which is redundant because you did a great job at that, I support the recognition the same way I did that night. Moments after the vote was taken, and Dr. Fritz can attest to this, I sent him a message and I said, I hope this will come back with context. And Dr. Fritz, I want to thank you for that because you did an amazing job. And I think that now this recognition, and though we won't get to vote on it, but this recognition actually means something. Because folks actually know what we're doing to support our students, not just a resolution with very little context. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Colon.
Ms. Rowland, thank you very much for bringing forth that information. I think it was very important for all of us to hear, as well as all of our students, and that we do care and that we are supportive of everyone, and especially in the LGBTQ community that we unfortunately made feel uncomfortable last week. And so that's shame on us. And thank you for bringing it forward. And thank you, Dr. Fritz, for bringing it back. And I hope that everybody knows that we do support everyone in our schools. Thank you.
Mrs. Cuthbert, I know that there was something you wanted to share.
Yes, I would. Thank you. I too want to thank Dr. Fritz for bringing it back. I did ask him to do that, and it was very, very well done. Of course, Mrs. Rowland always has just the exact words to put into our hearts. Thank you. Thank you very much. This I found very poignant, and it addresses not only our LGBTQ plus students, but all of our students who have. And we are all unique, and we're all different. And as we celebrate diversity, this is part of the poem speech by Amanda Gorham, who spoke at President Biden's inauguration. She is our nation's first youth poet laureate. And to quote a few lines, she writes, "We lift our gazes not to what stands between us, but what stands before us. We close the divide because we know to put our future first, we must put our differences aside. We lay down our arms so we can reach out our arms to one another. We seek harm to none and harmony for all." Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mrs. Cuthbert. Mrs. Rowland, thank you so much this evening for coming forward and sharing what is happening in our schools and how we are working to ensure the safety and well-being of every child. As I spoke last time, as a former classroom teacher, that was my responsibility. It still is my responsibility. It would be my responsibility tomorrow if I walked back into a classroom to provide every single student with a safe environment in which to learn. It doesn't matter who the child is, it doesn't matter what type of home life they come from, the color of their hair doesn't matter, the shoes that they wear, there's not a single thing that we should look at other than saying this is a child that has entered and it is our job to give them a safe learning environment. As I stated, that was what I worked towards all the time. I worked towards teaching children how to use their voice, And be okay with saying we can disagree on something, but we'll still be kind and respectful to each other. What I really hope as we move forward, and I've shared this with Dr. Fritz, is that we work on how we reduce the bullying piece. Because, yes, our LGBTQ students face this at times, and they should never face it. But our ESC students face this at times. Any child, unfortunately, sometimes that walks in faces it just simply because there's something different about them. But what I do know as a teacher, a parent, and a grandmother is that a lot of this does start at home. Because children typically come to school and they like and love everybody. When you see them walk into a VPK, a pre-K, or a kindergarten classroom, one of the cutest things to see, believe it or not, is all of a sudden when two little girls have the same shirt on and they look at you and they say, "We're twins." And in their mind, they're twins, and it doesn't matter if they favor each other in any way at all, but it's because they've got the same shirt on. Children don't see color. Children don't see differences. I was fortunate many years ago to have a little girl with Down syndrome join my kindergarten class. We started out for a half hour a day, and she worked her way up to 2 hours a day. And not a kid in my room treated her any differently. They all treated her with love and kindness and respect. And they saw the potential of what she could do. And I remember her mother coming in and shedding some tears because she said, "I never thought she'd ever be in a classroom with other students that were just her same age." And so what I encourage everyone to do tonight, and everyone that's listening, parents, here's a responsibility on you. At home, think about the words that you use. Think about the things that you say. Because even when they're 2 and 3 and 4, they pick up on something that you say or how you act or comments that you make. And then that changes maybe how they act in the classroom. But to teachers, I want to encourage each and every one of you that every student that walks through your classroom door, even those that may push your buttons, because trust me, there's some of them out there, and actually they're happy to see if they can get a rise out of you or get you upset. Take every one of them from where they walk in that door. Give them a safe learning environment. Let them know that while they're in your room, you will not allow or tolerate anyone to show them disrespect or to bully. And I've talked with Dr. Fritz about possibly having some tougher consequences for those students that are doing the bullying, because bullying is a learned behavior. And my heart breaks at times when I feel when the victims that are bullied end up with the consequences versus the person bullying. So I appreciate all that you and your team do. You're doing a great job out there, and I appreciate every safe classroom we have on campuses. I appreciate you. And so if everyone will just love every kid that walks through the door and show them respect, we can be a great nation. And I believe our students could show the adults this is how we need to behave and act towards others. So thank you, Dr. Fritz.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Rowland. Well done. Madam Chair, it's now time I'd like to recognize the month of April as Child Abuse Prevention Month. April is Child Abuse Prevention Month. It recognizes the importance of communities working together to help families thrive. April 1st is Wear Blue Day. And many in our community, in our schools, and VCS bus drivers and attendants will be wearing blue jeans, blue socks, and blue shirts, recognizing the importance of this day on April 1st. The next recognition I have is the month of April is Autism Awareness Month. The autism spectrum disorder, the fastest growing U.S. developmental disability, affects one in every 54 children. Early diagnosis and intervention, as well as an ongoing support for families, from families, doctors, and therapists and educators, can have a positive impact on our people with autism to achieve a high quality of life. Volusia County Schools is committed to developing programs and providing services that meet the diverse academic and social needs of those with autism. And as you came in today, I think you saw some displays for both of these for us. And both of these are extremely important. I do have one more, but I want to touch on this one really quickly because it really impacts our students, these two. We know that our students are our most precious commodity, and so it's very important for us, and we're all trained as educators to spot child abuse and to take the necessary steps when we see that. Again, that's a learned behavior, so I'm going to go back to the bullying piece, and that's something that we have to continue to work on as a school district, so you have our commitment to doing that. That's why we are starting with this restorative justice in middle schools next year, not as an option, but as an initiative, so that we can stop some of the bullying, because we know when students bullied, those are the folks that grow up at times and become the abusers of our children. Recognizing Autism Awareness Month is extremely important. I will tell you that we know that we are seeing an increased number of students on the spectrum. There is no doubt to that. We are seeing more. I remember when I was doing my master's in special education back in 1991, the statistic that was shared with us at that time was 1 in 500. We are now 1 in 54 on the spectrum. Now, yes, we know more than we did at the time. But we know just by adding our ASD units and what we've added over the last year that we have an increased student population that are on the spectrum and at very, very different levels. And so we are extremely committed to making sure that we're serving our students in the schools, getting them ready for life in our county as adults. So I'm very excited about this. It's a month, but like many of these recognitions that we do, it's something that we need. We use that month as a reminder, but it's something we never stop working on. And then I have one other recognition. April is also School Library and Media Month. School library programs are an important asset in the educational system, contributing to students' achievement and development while fostering both excellence and equality in education. Our media specialists provide leadership and expertise necessary to ensure the library program is an integral part of schools' instructional programs. I will tell you, I shared with you earlier with our custodial workshop, that I look at curb appeal when I walk onto a campus. I look at floors. There are certain things I look at. I always go to the library. And what I hope to see when I walk into any library in our county is I hope to see kids in there. And it doesn't matter what time of day, I want to see that building being used. And that's really important, because when you have a school where the librarian or the media specialist is engaged in the instruction that's going on, you can do all kinds of amazing things. And every principal out there knows how important it is and how important these people are. These are not your 9-to-5ers, I'm just telling you. Media specialists, a good media specialist, they work in the summertime. They work all year long. They work after hours. They're putting books in kids' hands. And you can almost tell whether or not you have a solid media specialist in a solid program before you even get to that media center, because you see the signs along the way. So, again, it's something that we cherish all year long, but this is our month to support it. Madam Chair, back to you.
Thank you, Dr. Fritz. At this time, Ms. Schultz, do we have any public participation concerning items on the consent agenda? Board members and Dr. Fritz, do we have anyone that would like to remove any items from the consent agenda? Mrs. Cuthbert, is there anything you would like to remove? Hearing that there
no,
are
ma'am.
No, okay, thank you. Hearing that there are no items to remove, do I have someone that would like to make a motion approving the consent agenda items?
So moved.
Mrs. Burnett has
second.
Made motion, and Mrs. Cuthbert has seconded it. So, board members, everyone in favor of the consent agenda items, say aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Then all consent items pass unanimously. We're moving on. We have 10 minutes, Dr. Fritz, before we need to do public comment. So we're moving on to item 15.01.
Yep. I do have a few announcements. Thursday, April 1st at 7 o'clock at DeLand High School, we will have our All-County Orchestra Showcase. On Friday, April 2nd, we will have our all-county jazz showcase at DeLand High School at 7 o'clock. On Tuesday, April 6th, we will have our Futures First Year Teacher Awards at 5 p.m. at Jackie Robinson Ballpark. The next school board workshop will be Tuesday, April 13th at 10 a.m. in this boardroom. The next board meeting is also Tuesday, April 13th at 3:30 in this boardroom. And I have a few other announcements just real quick. We are approaching the assessment season, and this is the state assessments that are coming to us. And I wanted to point out a few things on that. The first round of spring FSA testing begins next week with grade 3 and grades 4 through 10 in writing. The school's been preparing all year long. I'm very proud of the work that they've done. I'm ready for some good results to come back in. In our high schools, we have the Cambridge ACE, IB, and AP programs. The ACE exams will start April 26th, and they go through the month of May. Those are at five of our high schools, Deltona, New Smyrna, Pine Ridge, Seabreeze, and University. The IB exams start May 3rd at DeLand and Spruce Creek, and the advanced placement exams also start on May 3rd at all 10 high schools. So we're getting into it, there's no doubt about it. Excited for our students, they've been working hard. We will be getting our results back in the end of July for most of these assessments, but we will get our third grade scores back early. But I'd like to wish everybody good luck. I'd like to thank them for this hard work that they've put forward, getting our students ready. We recognize this is certainly a very different school year, but I'm going to mirror something that Ms. Haynes said earlier today. I want our families and I want our teachers to relax. We're there. We're there at this point. And so keep going forward, doing your very best, and that's all we're going to ask of you. We're just going to ask our students, we're going to ask our teachers to do our very best, and when the numbers come in, we'll deal with them. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Fritz. I don't know if you know or if anyone is here that could tell us, on the two items that are taking place at DeLand High, the All-County Orchestra and the All-County Jazz, are those open for any, like, parents or people to attend this year?
I think they are. Dr. B, do you know that? I think they are open, because we have not received any instruction that they wouldn't be. Okay.
Right.
Thank you, Dr. Berrio.
Thank you, because those are two wonderful events I've attended in the past, and it's so nice when you get to see the kids that they've worked so hard all year be able to show off with the orchestra and the jazz performances. And I'm happy to see DeLand High hosting it once again. We are 7 minutes away from public input point. I'm not... Are you okay if we start the internal audit piece and then move, or would you like to go ahead and...
We can certainly do that. Do that, like,
okay.
First 5 minutes.
Then we're going to start with item 16.01, which is the internal audit presentation and the audit committee recommendation.
At this time, I'd like Ms. Mueller to come forward. Ms. Mueller, we'll stop you at 6:30 and then come back to your presentation, okay?
Okay.
Hey there. Go ahead and introduce your guests for the audience.
I wasn't sure. They were out in the lobby, so I wasn't sure they were hearing what was going on. So, good evening. We are bringing back the internal audit scoping from RSM, as we discussed at the last board meeting. That we would consider a finance audit. And so they have spoken to several of district staff about this and formulating an SOW, but they also have the presentation based on our audit committee meeting that we held. And so we have Laura Manlove here from RSM, and so I'll go ahead and turn it over to her.
Good evening, Board and Dr. Fritz. Thank you for having me back again. If you recall, at the last board meeting, at the board's consensus, we went back to the audit committee. We held a meeting with the audit committee and discussed the three audit topics that came out of our last board discussion: an audit of maintenance, an audit of White Fleet, and an audit in the finance area. Through our due diligence process and in talking with Deb and her levels of team below her, we have crafted a scope of the audit that we think would be very valuable if we were to go into the finance area. We presented that scope to the audit committee and took into account all their questions, thoughts, and considerations. And after that approval from the audit committee, we bring it before you today. As we had previously discussed, the original budget for internal audit services did cover two audits, maintenance and White Fleet. And so for your consideration this evening is the adoption of a third potential audit, which is in the area of finance. So you can see before you this slide, this is the summary of the three audits that we are proposing that we perform at your request. And if you want to move to the next slide, Deb, thank you so much. Maintenance, this is no change since our presentation to you before, so I will save your minutes and move on to the next slide. Internal audit of finance, there are two main work streams or objectives, if you will, that we see ourselves focusing on in finance. Finance is a very large, complex piece of your organization. It touches every and all facet of everything that you do. Everything ultimately does run through finance. So it was very important that we carefully craft where we're going to be looking in finance to get you the best value and the best use of your audit dollars. These two areas that we came up with are related to the payroll functions, specifically at year end. And the second area is also in the payables process, especially when you convert systems. This is a great high-risk area to take a second look at. You certainly want to make sure that all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed in your payables area. So for that reason, these are the two focus areas in finance that we'd like to start with. Certainly, down the road through our normal internal audit function, we may present to you, propose other areas within finance. But for now, these are the two highest risk areas that we propose starting in. And lastly, Deb, thank you. White Fleet, there's no change to what we proposed to you last time. As Mr. Colon brought up, he had an excellent point last time. There's been a few process changes and management changes. We've had great discussion with your team and your staff. And we still think that there is some value to be added here and some good recommendations that we can assist and provide to you all. And the audit committee does seem to agree. So these are the three areas that we're proposing to perform our next three internal audits.
And I'd like to share that... And I'd like to share that I did exactly what you asked. I went back and met with the audit committee, which, once again, I want to thank all of you because the members that you put on that audit committee, they're outstanding. When we met, they asked some great questions, and they looked at what was happening. They even looked at the White Fleet piece. They looked at the finance piece, and they unanimously voted that they would like, if at all possible, to do all three. If not, they did rank them, but they felt that there was a need, and they asked questions about, you know, the current systems we were using, moving into the new software, things like that. And so it was a great discussion, and this is what they've come forth with. And we have one moment. Dr. Would you like to have discussion about this?
Well, does the superintendent have a recommendation?
You have a recommendation?
Yes, I do believe that we should go forward with the top two for sure. If the board pleasure is to wait on White Fleet, I think we can do that for another year. But if it's something the board feels that we need to do immediately, we can do all three, and we can budget for that.
So you've heard the superintendent's recommendation that he is willing to do two, or he's willing to do three. The committee said that if the money was there to do three, which if you read in the board docs, it said that there was, they would prefer to see all three, but they said if we had to wait, they would push the White Fleet. So,
Madam Chair?
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
Madam Chair, I make a motion that we accept all three, but do the first two first, finance and maintenance. That way we keep within our $100,000 budget that we have mentioned, but I do agree with Dr. Fritz.
Thank you, Mrs. Cuthbert. So she's made a motion. Do I have a second?
I second that.
All right.
Sure.
Yes. So just for clarity, so the recommended action, Ms. Cuthbert, was that we not only approve the 1 and 2 or 3, but also increase the budget to perform the 3. So are you only suggesting we do 2 and budget for 2, or are you suggesting we do 3 and budget for 3?
Well, I believe our this year's budget was, I think what Ms. Mueller said last time, was $100,000, correct? So that leaves this year for the first 2. We can do the light fleet next year with another budget.
We do have the option, Mr. Colon. For right now, the budget is $100,000, but we can increase that if the board wants to do all 3. Is what we're saying.
So my concern with the motion is the fact that we're only talking about 2, and one of the advantages seen and brought forth by the audit company was to get our white fleet started off with the correct practices or best practices. And so what I'm afraid of is if we wait until the following year, which arguably I don't even know that we can approve something for the following budget, we may lose the opportunity to start off correctly. So that's my concern. So Linda, correct me if I'm wrong, you're saying just do the top 2?
Correct, for this year. It started this year to maintain. With her presentation earlier, with our finance update at the workshop this morning, I would like to stay within our budget for this year's budget. That way she can plan, and it's not that few months away. She can then plan for the white fleet audit, gives it a chance to get working, to get going, and then we can see how it's operating after a few months of operation so we can tweak it. So if we go ahead and accept all 3, but only doing the finance and the maintenance in this year's budget, be paid out of this year's budget, and then the white fleet out of next year's budget, if that's possible.
And our budget changes in July?
July 1st, yes. We would have to wait to start performing the work and sign the contract until July 1st.
Do we know when we're expecting the cars to start arriving?
I believe they're arriving very soon, some of them. Some of them have to be ordered, but some, I believe, are local.
See, Mr. Colon, I think we need a chance for the plan that our district put forth to start operating, knowing that they know that there will be an audit coming within a few months. So it gets them the incentive to get it going straight, which I think is what they're going to do anyway, gives us a chance to analyze what Enterprise is doing for us, and to then have some data already accumulated for us to analyze and to be audited.
Mrs. Cuthbert, this is Ms. Haynes. When I met with the audit committee, and they asked additional questions about the fact that we were going with the Enterprise to rent vehicles, one of their concerns, and that's why they said if there was the funding to go ahead and move forward with all 3, they would like to see all 3, is they wanted to ensure that every vehicle was actually needed, because it wasn't until that board meeting when we talked about the white fleet that we actually learned who had vehicles assigned to them, and that there was some policies in reference to the number of miles vehicles were driven in order to earn a vehicle versus turning in mileage. And so we did ask we asked Laura and her team if all 3 audits could be performed simultaneously, and yes, they can, because they have experts in each of those areas. So I think kind of what Mr. Colon is saying, and where I'm at based on what the committee was saying, is I'm not sure if waiting for till we get the Enterprise vehicles is possibly the best use, because we may then pick up vehicles that we could have found out by looking at an internal audit that maybe we did not need all of those vehicles, which would then be saving us money versus, we may bring in 20 vehicles too many, but now we have to pay for them because we didn't analyze the people that they were being assigned to and if they met the criteria.
I understand your point of view. Thank you. Dr. Fritz, what is your input?
I think it's going to take us almost to the end of the year to get through goals one and two anyway. So I think it's okay to approve all three because I think the third audit is going to be on the next budget regardless. But I think where you're wanting to go today is to be able to give direction. If you were to just approve two, then we will have to come back to the board for the third one. So it's if you want to get moving now, then I would say approve all three.
Well, maybe did I thought that my motion was to approve all three, to do the first two first, and the third one to do out of next year's budget.
Right. I think that's where it's going to end up going.
Yeah. To me, it's kind of, it really doesn't matter because it's probably not going to start till after July anyway, so you can call it this year's budget or next year's budget. Chances are so many of these things are going to occur after it, so it's a matter of semantics. We're going to get it all done.
All right, so Mrs. Cuthbert,
I support her.
Mrs. Cuthbert, you made a motion that we move forward with all three, going ahead and starting with the first two, and then the third one with the thought it will come out of the July 1 new budget. Mr. Persis has seconded that. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed?
Nay.
Okay. Passes 4-1. Thank you very much. Thank you for all the work, and thank you for returning for a second time to discuss this with us. At this time, we're going to move into public input. This is our public participation time concerning items of general interest pertaining to public education in Volusia County. A total of up to 15 minutes will be provided for public comment at this time. Board members will not be responding at this time. I will call the first two names with the first person coming up to speak. Please state your name and speak clearly. If you'll need to pull the mic up to your closer to you. Oh, I have a lot more than.
We have 25, 26. These
three
of our students that are siblings that would like to come up together.
Oh, okay. All right, so board members, I have 25. Individuals that would like to speak independently, and then I have a set of three siblings that would like to speak together. So, we're going to go ahead and start.
Madam Chair, I think it's, we have our rules, and they are publicly announced ahead of time that we have 15 minutes for public input during this time of the meeting so that we can continue with the business of the meeting. And then at the end of the meeting, we always allow as much time as we need to listen to the remainder of the speakers who wish to speak. In terms of the order, I think you should take them in the order that you receive them. If we can get five in, six in during the 15 minutes, I think that's what's fair to the audience.
Okay, so just to be clear so that everybody knows what is left on the agenda, the items that we have not covered yet are 16.02, which is a board action item over the authorization to implement the custodial pilot program that we learned about in this morning's workshop. 16.03, which is a board action item for the adoption of the school board policy 307, the student progression plan. Item 16.04, which is a board action item, approval of the resolution for 2021-19 declaring property a surplus. Board action item 16.05, approval of some job descriptions. And those are the only items that are remaining. Mr. Persis has suggested that we only do 15 minutes of public input at this time. I'd like to hear from the other board members. Or actually, Mr. Doran, go ahead.
Well, I don't think we can vote on any item without giving an opportunity for the public to speak to it in advance. So if there are are people who want to speak to issues of general educational interest, which is 1701, then we can wait on those. But
we're at 1701 because it has to happen at 6:30 p.m.
Oh, I see.
And so
we're
it's a specific time.
Okay. Well, anybody who wants to speak to some item on the agenda that you're going to be voting on has to be heard before you vote.
No, I'm aware of that. This is all general.
These are all general.
And we are at the general point because it's 6:30. And so the question is, do we go ahead and only go with 15 minutes, which would be approximately five people at this time, then move on and come back to this for the next public participation piece, or do we hear all 28 at this time?
So at 5, maybe I missed it, but at item 501?
That's consent.
Oh, that's consent only. So where is it on the agenda that we're going to have public participation on items that are going to be voted on? I don't see it.
It happens at each item.
Oh, you're doing it at each item. Okay.
Madam Chair, I'm okay with hearing them all. I think that at the end of the day, those three topics aren't going to take very long even after, but I just think we should just go ahead and hear them all out.
All right. Mrs. Burnett?
I'm indifferent. Whatever. We're going to hear from everybody. I think it's important that we hear from everybody. I'm good either way, to be honest, whether it's now or later.
Okay. Mrs. Cuthbert?
I'm in total favor of if someone took the time to come to our came to our board meeting to hear us, to talk to us in a professional manner, giving their 3 minutes, we should be patient enough to hear them. Thank you.
All right, then we're going to go ahead and we will start. The first speaker will be Ms. Anna Hannon, followed by Crystal McClure. So if the first speaker will come forward and the second speaker will be ready. Do you have an overflow area, Mr. Myers? Do you have Anna Hannon or Crystal McClure in your overflow? Oh. Huh?
I'm number two.
You're number two? Are you Anna?
I'm Anna Hannon.
Please. Yeah, did you fill out a card for him?
Yes, he has a card.
That's great. Two for one. We'll take that.
Please bring the student in. Yes. All right. Welcome, Jude, and we're happy to hear from you this evening. You have 3 minutes, okay? You may begin.
My name is Jude Sarvi, and I would like to hear my speech. When I wear my mask, I can barely breathe because I have asthma. I have tried to wearing a face shield, but it gave me a headache. When I did Volusia Live and had to be on the computer all day, it would also give me a headache. This is why I wanted to share some examples on what I've encountered since the mask policy has been in place at school. When I was in art, my mask was down, and I happened to sneeze into my arm. The teacher got irritated because my mask was down when I sneezed. She said that I was spreading germs all over the place, even though I was using proper sneeze hygiene by sneezing into my elbow as recommended. My only other option would be to sneeze into my mask. If I were to do that, it would result in me breathing in germs the rest of the day. I have also had a teacher that has yelled at me 2 times due to the mask. The first time, I was at my post as a safety patrol, and my mask was down because I was outside. Then he approached me and said that I was not being a good example to the younger grades. The second time, he yelled at me for having my mask down in front of all the other kids and it embarrassed me. This time, I was outside and 6 feet away from the other people. Sometimes, other students would pick on me for wearing a different type of mask, even though it correctly fit the policy. One other teacher gave me attitude for my type of mask. All these scenarios have happened because of the expectations of the mask to be worn and the moralizing of that behavior. I'm a student that has never had any disciplinary problems. This year, due to the mask policy, I've been reprimanded, shamed, and embarrassed. I hope I wouldn't be trespassed from my school for not wearing a mask, like my mom was trespassed from this building for not wearing a mask, who is here to advocate for my right to breathe freely at school. Thank you.
Thank you, Jude. Ms. Crystal McClure. Followed by Tara McNaughton.
My name is Crystal McClure. At the last meeting, you guys did discuss the LGBTQ week. And even though I don't agree that a week should be labeled as such, you did argue that not only do these students need support and to be free from discrimination, but that this is something that should be true for all of the students, no matter what sets them apart or makes them different. But we've observed something very decisive in our school culture, and it is the mask. Due to the face mask policy, the false hope the safety masks give, and the belief of masks as the holy grail of health, there has consequently been bullying, harassment, and discrimination amongst our students. When you created this policy, I feel you took a side. You drew a line in the sand. You didn't allow for choice. And due to this, both students and teachers alike have taken it upon themselves to shame and berate any student not wearing their mask appropriately and for not wearing it when they have the right to remove it, such as PE, recess, gym, or when 6 feet apart. And now the CDC actually says 3 feet apart. If we're going to preach a discrimination-free school, then we need to be free of medical discrimination as well. We need to remove a policy that allows for judgment on another student due to their own health preferences. If a student may have enough bodily autonomy to identify with the opposite gender and the school supports that, then why can we not support a child who wants to wear a face mask and a child who doesn't want to wear a face mask for whether personal or health reasons? Through this policy and through our county, the mask has been moralized and these seen not wearing it assumed to be selfish, inconsiderate, or immoral. And those who shame them for it feel righteous in doing so. School board, you missed an opportunity here to create a non-judgmental environment when you created this egregious policy. If we want to teach students to respect one another, it starts with this issue too. We have taught people not to believe come as you are, but instead to believe you are only worth coming if you have a face mask. Please understand the message that this sends and understand how we are teaching our children to view others. I also want to add, I've heard from some of you, it's not our decision. Speak to your governor. We follow Department of Health, which follows CDC. Well, I spoke to the Department of Health, and they said this is not true. Ms. Boswell told me clearly, your school board has the right to make this change. And I quote from her, I can only give them numbers and recommendation changes from the CDC. You seem to follow what you want from the CDC. And the example I'll give is the face shield. Nowhere on the CDC does it state that is it effective alone, and many kids are wearing this face shield all day long. So what's the point of the mask anyway? It's a shame that I can take my kids to their pediatrician's office in town, and it requires no such face covering. But in order to receive an education that my tax dollars pay for, we have to follow rules that simply don't make sense. You are not doctors, neither is the Department of Health, and it's time to remove this policy. Let's teach students to love and respect each other again and never allow such a decisive policy to ever be considered in our schools. Thank you.
Thank you. Tara McNaughton, followed by Carol Sawyer.
Hello, my name is Tara McNaughton. I appreciate the chance to speak. I will say this, I have some notes. I don't know where to begin at this point after listening today. I'm disappointed. I hear that there's no vote being taken today. I'm a little puzzled by that, since there was before. I'm not sure where the shift is. I would love to get a hand on the material that was mentioned today to kind of look through that. But anyway, all that being said, I know the last meeting we had on March 9th discussing this, each of the board members gave their reasons for not supporting the motion made. Some reasons included this singled out a group of people. In other words, it would create more division. That many of you said it did not belong in the school system. One said it went against his convictions. And yes, many of you did say the board could not answer parents' questions regarding the resolution.
It was stated that this could be revisited to become more inclusive, as all teens who struggle with thoughts of suicide are important. The LGBTQ plus group is not more important than other teens who do not fall into this category, and vice versa. Therefore, if suicide is a motivating factor here, be all inclusive. As this issue does not only exist among the LGBTQ. If bullying is the motivating factor, then address all bullying of all people, no matter race, gender, or how they view themselves. No bullying is ever okay. Just like an adult writing an article in a news journal, sorry, I have to go here, anonymously, which is cowardice, by the way, painting a picture by only giving part of the information and making leading statements is divisive and spiteful and unethical, in my opinion, bullying. And I know there's somebody on this board that is enduring bullying herself, if you ask me, for standing. And I appreciate you standing. I believe this would fall into bullying, as they didn't mind printing the names of those who stood up for their convictions, not their agenda, but their convictions, yet they chose to remain anonymous. Or like the news media, who only airs things that fits their narrative. So I want to say this. My daughter went to school. She graduated in 2017. There was one boy who committed suicide. He did not fall into this group. Last year, two friends that also graduated close to her, obviously they're not teens anymore, but they did attend Taylor High School. They committed suicide during COVID season. I see it's real. I don't belittle it. But I don't think the answer is naming out one group. I really don't. I believe whenever you all mention being all-inclusive, revisiting this, where is that is what I'm looking for. Where is the all-inclusiveness? Because I still only see naming one group. I don't understand that. I don't really know where to go from here. Again, I'm very disappointed. I don't understand how this rolled out today. I am requesting that you be more inclusive. I do have a problem naming it LGBTQ week. So I know my time's up, but 3 minutes is not enough, and I have many more questions that just aren't being answered, even prior to today, that I've tried to get answered.
Thank you, Mrs. McNaught. Carol Sawyer, followed by Buffy Smith.
Good afternoon, Chairwoman Cuthbert, board members, and Dr. Fritz. My name is Carol Sawyer, and I reside in New Smyrna Beach. I hope you all had a relaxing spring break. I would like to address the board about that very thing, spring break. I would like to ask you all to strongly reconsider the dates for spring break 2022 so they run concurrent with Bike Week 2022. For years, AFSCME President Kathy Knowles and our STS representative, both on the calendar committee, have been strongly recommending that spring break and Bike Week occur in the same week. We are all aware of the fact that there was a fatal collision between a school bus and a biker several weeks ago. Our bus operators are very professional and defensive drivers and are always on the lookout for the bikers. However, the bikers are not always on the lookout for the school buses. We all know that daily traffic is bad enough with all the bikers in town. Also, because of all the extra traffic during Bike Week, we had many buses running late to schools in the afternoon. That led to students getting home late. For the safety of all motorists, please consider spring break and Bike Week to run concurrently in the same week. Maybe Volusia County officials and the school board officials can work together and meet somewhere in the middle so that both spring break and Bike Week happen in the same week. On another note, I would also like to give a big shout out to Mr. Aiken. As the director of transportation for decades, he created the best student transportation services right here in Volusia County. Over the course of his time with STS, Mr. Aiken has been featured in several articles in the National Student Transportation Magazine and has received several awards from the National Association for Pupil Transportation for the quality and safety he has brought to student transportation in Volusia County. We have the best equipment, our buses and our shops, the highest safety standards, and the sharpest professional appearance, our uniforms, in all of Florida and beyond. I have been involved with several AFSCME training seminars. I have talked with many employees from other counties, and I can tell you, I am proud to speak up about being a bus operator in Volusia County.
Thank you, Mr. Aiken, for all you have done for Volusia County Student Transportation Services. And last one thing, I would like to update you on my new recruit. He told me this morning that he is scheduled to take his written CDL test on April 6th. We are both excited about the potential sign-on bonus, hopefully coming our way. Please be sure to consider that the employee also gets the sign-on bonus. Otherwise, there isn't any reason for the employees to recruit new bus operators. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Ms. Sawyer. Buffy Smith. And then following Buffy, it's Trevor Tierra. And is Journey also with you?
Journey's on her own.
Okay, so it'll be Trevor and Tierra together following Ms. Smith. You may.
Good afternoon, Dr. Fritz and board members. I'm here today to talk about the four-ticket graduation limit, which still does not suit all families. I am especially disappointed as a mother of a Taylor High student where we would never come close to filling the max occupancy at the Ocean Center. With a four-ticket limit, one of my son's own siblings would have to be left out, not to mention his grandparents and aunts and uncles who have played a huge role in his life. I have pictured this scenario in my head many times, sitting there on graduation day in that huge facility, knowing some very important people were missing, and then looking around at all the empty seats and just feeling absolutely heartbroken. I would like to point out that just yesterday, our state governor made the bill SB 72 immediately effective that allows businesses and event facilities to function as normal without the fear of being sued. With this bill, Governor DeSantis sent this message to the public, and I'm directly quoting him. We want folks to be able to live their lives, to provide opportunities for people to do different things, and then let individuals make decisions about what they want to do. You want to go listen to the band? Go do it. I am pretty confident that if he is encouraging people to live their lives and go watch a band if they so desire, then he would most definitely want us to have the choice to watch our children, grandchildren, nieces or nephews, brothers or sisters walk across a graduation stage. This milestone is a great achievement that only happens once in a high school student's life, so I ask you, Dr. Fritz and board members, don't diminish this day for them.
Thank you. Trevor and Tierra, followed by Journey.
Hello, school board. My name is Trevor, and I have a few instances I would like to talk about with face masks. It is getting harder outside, and allergy season is here. It's hard to breathe with the mask on. Temps in the higher 80s will be next week, and it will only be getting harder before the end of the school year. Since coming back to school and wearing a face mask every day, I developed severe acne. It's not just an inconvenience. It hurts and is embarrassing. We have spent over $100 a couple of times trying to find the perfect acne solution for my face. But since I'm only 13, a lot of skin products are way too strong for my skin and cause other issues. The solution is no mask trapping the heat and causing sweat and oil to build up. My main acne areas are the cheeks where my mask sits and my forehead under my hair. My hair on top was a lot longer, but how I liked it, but now my hair got cut, and I had to do that to clear up the skin and cool me off while wearing a mask. Adults age 40 and up can get the vaccine starting April right now, and starting April 5th, adults 18 and up can get vaccinated too. With more being able to get vaccinated and herd immunity grown, when can we take off our face masks?
Hello, I'm Tiara DePasquale, and I'm here to talk about what's been happening at my school with masks. At the beginning of the year at gym, we had assigned seats, and we were in very strict rules on masks. We were socially distant during workout videos in our assigned area, in our assigned seats. Kids would be told to pull their masks up at gym. I would pull mine down too because I couldn't breathe. Now at gym, we can sit wherever we want and have our masks on. On top of that, we are now allowed to play volleyball, foursquare, and basketball at our gym with our masks off. Now that we are coming to the end of the school year, we have FSA soon. FSA is very stressful now. It's very stressful, and now we have to do it while wearing masks. With allergy season and wearing masks, sometimes I feel like I can't breathe. I take allergy medicine daily. I still have a hard time breathing with a mask on. Teachers at my school have been getting vaccinated. In studies show, 1/6 of Volusia County has had at least one shot of the vaccine. Thank you for listening to me, and have a nice day.
Thank you. So Journey is next, followed by Anna Hannon.
Hello, my name is Journey. I'm here as a Volusia County senior asking for more tickets to graduation. My stepmom has been a part of the push for 2 to 4 tickets. As a child of a blended family, only having 4 tickets prevents my granny from going to graduation. When my parents were at work, there was only one person who could go to every single weightlifting meet. That was my granny. Many times our team left the school to travel to meets, and my granny was the only one who had a flexible schedule to go for me. She knows every girl and their families on the team. She has been my biggest supporter. She's even vaccinated, but there aren't enough tickets for her to come to my graduation. With only 4 tickets, my younger siblings will not be at my graduation either. On that day, I should be proud of all I have done. And I will not be missing the people who I want to be there the most. For weeks, we have been shuffled around on who makes the graduation occupancy regulations, from the school board to the Ocean Center to the County Council, now back to the school board. This is our moment. We are pandemic seniors. Seniors have things been taken away. Please do not take away our family's opportunity to celebrate all we have overcome. If NASCAR can fill the speedway, why can't 2021 seniors and their families do the same? Dr. Fritz has left the room, but Dr. Fritz, if there is an Ocean Center, cannot accommodate the guidelines you have set, move our graduation to the speedway. Thank you for listening to me today.
Following Anna Hannon will be Crystal Bono.
Good afternoon. First, I want to say that my mask choice colleagues and I did some research, and 1/3, 22 out of 67, Florida school districts have had a mask optional policy this year. That means that 22 school boards chose to not follow the Department of Health or CDC recommendations, but rather, as elected representatives, follow their constituents' wishes and let the parents make healthcare decisions. In 2019, if it were suggested that students and teachers in school should cover their mouth and nose, it would have been utterly rejected. Why? Because we would have seen no reasonable rationale for any of this, for any reason, to make our children's breathing any less optimal for their entire school day. To not see their smiling faces and be able to understand one another through words and expressions. What changed in 2020? Fear. Fear and paranoia that we are projecting onto our children. We are creating an environment where a bare face and a smile is not welcomed, and instead, their breath, the very thing they need to survive, is weaponized and considered a danger to those around them. The shame in this all is that many believe this is true, that their fellow classmate, student, or teacher is a bioweapon instead of a human being worth of dignity. If you may not freely breathe in your public school, how can you feel welcomed there? We have told them through face covering policy that they are no longer welcome to come as you are. You'd better come cover your face to be worthy of your in-person education. If you don't, you are a harm to others. What are we doing to the psychological health of our children? I do not want to argue science or try to change your own personal preference, but I do want to speak to what is more powerful than any science, which is a mother's intuition. Tell me, those of you who are mothers, which one of you, when you checked on your babies sleeping at night and found the blanket over their face, did not remove it so they could breathe unhindered? Would you have left it there because the fabric is breathable? No. Why not? Because if there's any chance that it could cause harm to your child, you would do away with it. Those babies of ours are now older and in school, but the intuition to keep our children safe and protected is the same. The mask that is over their face all day is like a blanket over their perfect face at night. There's no science or CDC recommendation that will supersede a mother's intuition to be the best decision maker for her child. And we reject the policy that undermines the parent's authority and demands compliance with or else erroneously removes the child's right to their in-person education. Parental rights is not a partisan issue. The child's right to their education is not yours to hold hostage with a ransom of a face mask. The face covering policy must end. Thank you.
Thank you. Crystal Bono, followed by Jennifer Strickland.
Good afternoon. I am a parent of a senior at Taylor High School. She is at work, so she wrote something and asked me to read it. Hi, my name is Emma Bono. As a 2021 senior, I feel robbed of a lot of normal things seniors would get to do. My senior homecoming was canceled, as well as prom, grad bash, and so many other things. As much as I understand regulations for COVID, I don't want to let this virus take any more from me, my classmates, or our families. I've never been afraid of the virus, but knowing that it would steal most of my regular senior year experiences, I chose to do online school. I continued after second semester because COVID continued to hurt my expectations for my last year of high school. Coming from a large family, the four tickets allowed would only allow two of my siblings to join my parents, leaving me to choose which one of them could not attend. Being the oldest of four children, my grandparents, my aunts, and uncles want to also be able to see the first of us to graduate. Not only that, but there are others who have helped me to grow up and become the best version of myself, and I want to be able to share this moment with them, this special day, this milestone of my life and end of an era with them. At the beginning of this year, going to football games, we were able to buy pods of about 10 to 20 people and be separated with safe regulations. Why can't we explore these options for our graduation ceremony? Going to Taylor, a small school compared to the others, I feel that we should be able to do something like that. Not only does the Ocean Center have the capacity, but it also has the ability for us to keep those simple regulations. The Ocean Center is a huge space for our small school with the ability for that amount of people. If the Ocean Center cannot accommodate this for us as a smaller school, then as a pandemic senior, I feel like the county and the school district should explore other venues. Each high school in Volusia County has a football field, or what about Stetson University and Speck Martin? These are all options that we could explore so that we would have more options to be able to give my family more tickets. Thank you for your consideration and your time on this topic. And as a parent, this is a milestone that we want their families to experience with them. We have seen them suffer this year, and we understand, and we have followed the rules. But COVID cases are down, and people are getting vaccinated. And this milestone is something that we should allow them to be celebrated. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Jennifer Strickland, followed by James Page.
Good evening. We are here today directly addressing Dr. Fritz. I'm going to skip for a minute the hypocrisy of the decision to limit graduation attendance versus the other decisions Volusia County Schools has made, allowing our students to play sports and things like that. We have been told that the Ocean Center is dictating the attendance. However, after speaking with the Ocean Center and Mr. Rechtenwald's comments at the last county council meeting, it is obviously that, Dr. Fritz, that you have not been interested in the alternate configurations prior to the CDC reducing the social distancing, and it seems like we may still not be interested. If they had alternate seating plans that would have allowed for more attendance before the reduction to 3 feet, it would seem like to me that we would have reached a greater increase than simply 2 persons per graduate. I would like to quote Mr. Rechtenwald from the county council meeting on March 16th, before the CDC reduced the guidelines to 3 feet. I quote, "I know Mr. Riddle has already developed some other configurations that will put more people in the Ocean Center." Mr. Rechtenwald goes on to say, "We will work with the school board because that is critical, because what we have now is what the school board asked for. So I want to make that clear. In our discussions with the school board, that's what we have today is that the two-ticket system because that is what they wanted." He goes on to compliment Mr. Riddle, saying that he is a no better convention center manager at solving problems. And like I say, and I'm going to quote him again, he already has other configurations that would expand the amount of guests. I'm going to remind you that that statement was made March 16th, prior to the CDC reducing those restrictions to 3 feet. So if there were alternate configurations ahead of the reduction, that should further expand, not just double the attendance to 4. This is a fight worth fighting for our kids. And I'm going to leave you with a common sense question. We are socially distancing and isolating family groups and students that are already around each other. For example, my family tradition, before every graduation, including my sisters and myself, would go out to dinner ahead of the graduation. We will do that again for my nephew, Micah. There'll be 20-something of us that will hug him, take pictures with him, give him his gifts, and celebrate. Then we'll watch 4 of them walk into the Ocean Center, an empty Ocean Center at that, to stay back while they take our germs in with them after we've just hugged all over him and kissed him. It does not make sense to socially distance people that are not socially distanced on a daily basis. We ask you to reconsider this decision. Either find alternate venues. Do not make a one-size-fits-all decision for these graduates. They do not deserve that. I have 7 seconds left, so I'm just going to simply say the masks are silly. Let us parents have our choices back for our kids. Thank you.
Thank you. James Page, followed by Sean Kelly.
Hello. Good evening.
Good evening.
I don't have any kind of speech or anything like that. I'm just saying directly, and that's how I am.
Yes.
This is my first board meeting. I have 2 kids in elementary school. Madam Chairman, from being a kindergarten teacher, you understand where I'm coming from on this. I have a 4-year-old. It's in VPK. I have a 3-year-old that just started pre-K just this past Monday after spring break. These masks are ridiculous for these kids. There's not many COVID cases with the kids. There's more COVID cases with adults. COVID cases are going down. Teachers are getting vaccinated. So what's the purpose of having the kids with the mask when I have to tell my 4-year-old what is going on? He doesn't understand what's going on. He's being forced to wear a mask in PE. He's having to wear a mask in class no matter what. When we're out and about, we don't have him wear a mask. I just had to make my 3-year-old put a mask on. He doesn't understand because he's a preemie. He was 30 weeks. He has asthmatic problems, possibly. He's having to wear this in class now, and he doesn't understand what's going on. And I'm speaking on behalf of all the parents here on the school board. Please remove the masks. It's not worth it, especially for these kids, because we have to touch doorknobs. We have to touch everything. I'm having to touch just like this desk, just like everybody else is. What's the purpose of it? Why? And I'm looking out for my kids because we couldn't even have our first day of school with my child this year. He goes into kindergarten next year, and we won't be able to do that because we have to just hand him off. We can't even walk in like all other my other parents have in the past. I'm here for my wife because she has asthma problems and she has to be home with the kids. I don't like this. Please, I would like to have a vote on this tonight if we could. Please, to have this taken out. Please. And I'm asking this on the behalf of all these parents here tonight. And I'm begging you for that, please. Because it doesn't make sense. Just thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Page, can I have you, if you don't mind, before you leave, I'd like Dr. Balgobin to just get some information from you for what school your children are at. Because actually, for the age, especially your three-year-old, we put some pieces into the policy where those children at that age did not have to have masks on. Okay.
I can actually say that. We just purchased a home in Deltona back in July, so we're zoned for Forest Lake Elementary. That's where my three-year-old's at in the pre-K program. He's actually with the ESC,
yes.
Because of his issues with being a premature child. My son is actually in the VPK program at Discovery because they were already fully booked. Okay. At Forest Lake, but he's going to Forest Lake for kindergarten.
So what I want you to know, and normally we would not speak with you, but I felt you needed to know this, especially since you're a new parent. In the policy, we put in some guidelines for our children that were in ESE programs and for our younger children, and we did put in guidelines that no child was to have mask on when outside for recess or PE, okay? So I appreciate you giving us that additional information, and we're going to follow up on this. And I believe you put your phone number down on the card, and we will be reaching out to you.
Thank you very much, because that was actually not addressed to me, because our teachers actually told he needs to. They're trying to make him wear a mask throughout my three-year-old. But my four-year-old, he doesn't understand this either. So that's what I'm trying to say. But I'm speaking on behalf of this, because he's going into kindergarten.
Yes.
And I'm speaking on behalf of all of these. It's not fair. It's not fair to our kids because they don't understand what's going on, especially elementary kids.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Sean Kelly, followed by Kyle Durden.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Sean Kelly. I'm a resident of Ormond by the Sea. I'm a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel, and I won't beg you for anything. You all work for me. I'm a family nurse practitioner with 25 years of healthcare experience. Most importantly, I'm the father of a 6th grade OBMS student and an 11th grade Seabreeze student. And I just want to say how proud I am of those students that came up here in front of you all and spoke to the injustice they are experiencing daily. The bullying, and the physical discomfort they are experiencing. So I want to read a quote that I think fits for them very well. And it goes like this. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will. If you find out what a people will submit to, and you found out the exact amount of injustice and wrong that will be imposed upon them, the limits of tyrants are prescribed by the endurance of those whom they oppress. Now it's Frederick Douglass. I presume you all allowed to teach him still, right? But I'm here today specifically to speak about your mask mandate. And on behalf of my children, and now the children that I heard up here today, demand, as Frederick Douglass suggested, that you rescind this injustice imposed upon our children. I've never been compelled to speak in front of a school board prior to today. Coincidentally, today is my daughter's 12th birthday, but she urged me to come here instead. And she said, if I can do it, you can do it. I believe the mask mandate for children is misguided, politically motivated, and has the potential to cause harm, mental and physical harm to the well-being of children, and is based not on science. You are entrusted with my children's education and provide a safe environment, as I'm entrusted with people's lives in a hospital. But unlike you, I've never mandated any treatments for a patient. To do so would be a violation of their autonomy. I can recommend, I can highly recommend, I can strongly recommend that you do this under the threat of risk of injury or death, even. They can still ignore my advice. But I'm still there for them afterwards. I don't punish. I never mandate. I don't ask for submission. And their health is my job. I can't understand a mask mandate to begin with. The CDC recommends face masks. They do not mandate them. So if you follow CDC guidelines, you in fact recommend wearing masks, not mandate them. I had more about the statistics, but someone already spoke to it, but through my own research, and I am fully qualified to do healthcare research, I found that a third of the counties do not have mask mandates. And in my research, they have higher, better testing than Volusia County, almost all of them. They either have better testing with lower test rates, with lower positive test rates. So how can that be?
Sir.
If my children are the bioweapon of mass destruction you say they are, then these numbers would be off the chart if they didn't have to wear masks.
Sir, I do apologize, but your 3 minutes are up, but I want to thank you for coming and speaking
thank you.
On behalf of your children. Thank you.
Work for me, buddy.
Kyle Durden, followed by Karen Weinrich.
Good evening. Board members, Dr. Fritz, I am here to address this one-size-fits-all venue matter for these seniors. If the one-size-fits-all, then every school needs to be afforded all the others. Give us the engineering track, the communications academy, the medical track, otherwise school demographics do not matter in this fight. I am severely shaken up over this because I am passionate about these kids that have lost 2 years of things that they will never be able to get back. They will never get back their prom or their graduation. You guys have failed these seniors. You've had over a year to find a place and make a final suggestion of where all these kids could have their classes graduate without them having to limit them to four people. Four people. Do you remember your graduation? Do you remember how many people were there for you? I remember. But I also remember I won prom king. And I remember that I have that to look back on, and these seniors don't. I'm urging you. I'm pleading with you. Give them more than four tickets to graduation. It's not possible. Look at the genetics and the demographics of this county. They both, a lot of parents are single parents, but there's also duplicate parents, co-parenting, grandparents that are along with them. The whole ride. I'm simply pleading with you guys to come up with a better solution. And I will actually quote Dr. Hill, who was a former board member, saying regarding the mask, "It's refreshing to see that some of the assisted living facilities in Deland have removed their restrictions and letting people get back to a living normal life. It's unfortunate, though, that cities surrounding this area and the school board still have a mask mandate requiring children to wear masks. No science supports this. No nonsense politicians need to let science guide their policies and not politics." Thank you.
Thank you. Karen Weinrich, followed by Jonathan Weinrich.
Good evening. Karen Weinrich from Port Orange and teacher at Spruce Creek Elementary. I've got three things to try to cram into 3 minutes. First of all, I wanted to talk real quickly about volunteers. Due to contact tracing this year, at the moment, only retired teachers are allowed to volunteer. Now that the vaccine is more available, especially to our older population, many of which are our volunteers, I would ask that you consider opening volunteering to any fully vaccinated volunteer. We desperately need our volunteers back, and many of them are eager to get back. And if they're fully vaccinated, that would eliminate the need to contact trace. Secondly, I'm here to speak about masks. As a parent and a teacher, I fully support keeping the mask mandate for the rest of the year. You know, I've heard all these public comments. I know that maybe some children struggle with it. I have had no issues getting my students to comply with the mask mandate. In fact, I was pleasantly surprised how easy it was. The masks are working. Both Jonathan and I have been exposed and quarantined twice, and neither of us have contacted COVID, and I believe that the consistent use of masks were a major factor. Masks are more than a personal choice. They are about protecting others. I hear, what are we teaching our children? We're teaching them to care about others. Because when we wear a mask, we are not just protecting ourselves, we are protecting those around us. And that is an important message to give to our children. Lastly, I came here all fired up to talk about the LGBTQ resolution that did not pass last time. So I do thank you for bringing that back. And thank you for the explanation from Ms. Rowland. You know, I was very disappointed. I didn't make it here for the beginning of the meeting last time, so I went back and listened to all of it. And you know, I heard, we don't want to make it political, but by not supporting it, it became political. Who LGBTQ students are is not political. It is who they are. The reason for this week is because, and I went and looked it up as the coalition who supports it, they say LGBTQ individuals can face issues that reinforce societal stressors and stigmas even from within the healthcare system. The public comments we heard at the last meeting are prime examples of those types of things and the reason we need this week. You know, the message that was sent, whether purposeful or not, and I know it was not purposeful, was that LGBTQ students, parents, and employees don't matter. I want to remind you, we need to support our LGBTQ students, but also we have parents and employees who are LGBTQ, and we need to support them as well. Thank you, Mr. Cologne, for your clarifying comments. I appreciate it. I appreciate your apology, and I really do appreciate it. I know that I'm sure that others do as well. So thank you for that.
Jonathan Weinrich, followed by Chad.
Hello, I'm Jonathan Weinrich. I am a senior at Seabreeze High School, and I've been here before, so hello again. To start off, I would like to discuss the Spring Break Challenge, which, if you guys don't know, for high schoolers, it incentivizes us to complete 85% of our online courses or have 20 hours of SAT practice in Khan Academy. This incentive program really disappoints me. The program shows students are not putting forth effort without reward. This program does not benefit any students' futures. Many adults in this room can attest that not all work comes with rewards, especially work you sign up for. On a more personal note, I feel I have missed out. I don't have any online classes, and as a senior in my last quarter, who has been accepted to college since August, I do not feel the obligation to take the SAT again. So why do I need to do 20 hours of SAT practice? So the option of doing Khan Academy obviously does not spark my interest. I know plenty of my classmates are in the same position. This makes it seem that seniors can just kick back and relax for this last quarter, and as you guys emphasized before, that is not true. If the county truly relies on incentives, those seniors who have senioritis and don't have online classes cannot access. I encourage you to rethink the idea of this program. My second subject to discuss is also about the LGBTQ health awareness, and I would also like to thank you guys for passing that. This is a good step, but now we must act. Recognition is not enough. We must give direct mental help by providing more trained counselors in schools. And the reason these people matter is because, according to the CDC, LGB youth are almost 5 times as likely to have attempted suicide compared to heterosexual youth. Moreover, according to the Trevor Project, 40% of transgender adults have attempted suicide. Students, teachers, and school board members need to be aware of the unique challenges they face. And once again, I would like to emphasize the fact that they are who they are. The way someone is just that. It is not political. Me wearing glasses is not political. My curly hair is not political. Me being straight is not political. I was born this way. There should be no politics involved when it comes to the rights of other peoples. I urge you to offer more help providing counselors to Volusia County schools. I would also like to mention in my last 30 seconds that in this last 3 minutes, I have not struggled to breathe. Also, I would like to answer those people asking why we wear masks. It's also to protect others, especially teachers. They are at risk. They are the ones we are protecting. My parents and my brother are teachers, and I would like you to protect them. Thank you.
Thank you. Chad, followed by Alexander Vargas.
Hello, I'm Chad McNaughton. I'd like to thank you for your time tonight. I was at the last meeting when this LGBT subject came up. I observed some things at the last meeting. Some people spoke from their convictions, what makes them up from their core. They spoke about that, and they met direct opposition. We could tell it. I could sense it at the back of the meeting. It was kind of interesting, a form of bullying, what we're trying to stand up against. Anyway, I just want to say this. Vantage point. What you see depends on where you stand. Evidently, some of you here stand way far back. This is a question that I just sat back there. It's like, if we really care about the students, right, and we're saying that we're going to train teachers who still have to teach, then answer this question. When does a teacher engage in meaningful conversation that leads to help these students that are in this group, right? It's during class when they're supposed to be doing their job. And so this is okay for you. Like if your student or if your child was in this group, and we just heard the statistics of the suicide rate, you're okay with someone who's tasked with 99% of their job teaching all the other students to try to catch them. It's like having a net with holes this big. You're saying one thing and doing something else. Where have you put your time and effort into coming up with an agenda to fund guidance counselors? We heard in the last meeting, and it was just come up in topic, that you have one per 700 students. Who's failing who? You know, you say you care about these students, and I'm back there as a father of a student, and it's lies. You're just saying something to smooth it over to sound like this is the hot topic. LGBTQ, oh, don't touch that. We can't do anything. You're talking out both sides of your mouth. That's what the students see. I've been a group leader for children and youth for 14 years. They see through that. The only person that makes feel good are some of the parents here and you. You're going to go back and pat yourself on the back and think you've done something really good for all these students. But get this, when you want a teacher to engage with a student in class, how many other eyes are going to be in there? In ears. They got better ears than any of you. Than me. I can't even hear something. My daughter turns something on her phone. It sounds like a mosquito. I can't hear it. It bothers my son. But here's the thing. All these other eyes and ears, you are asking for trouble. Because when they confide in that teacher, what's going to happen? You've just opened it up. Everybody else, if there is bullying, I don't agree that no bullying should ever happen in school. I've got 19 seconds, got a lot to say. But you're sitting here saying, let's ask a teacher to do something else, right? Let's add something to your job description. Why don't you stop what you're doing, Mr. Persis? Add something to your job description to come in and listen to these students and be a safeguard for them. You know what's going to happen? Some of your other job description isn't going to get done that someone else is counting on. I'm counting on a teacher to do her job to teach my kid how to excel in life and go forward. You're asking a teacher to do all these other things, plus be a guidance counselor and listen for someone who's about to commit suicide. This is the biggest bunch of crap I've ever heard. If you really care and you really care and you really care, do something else. Add some money to it and get somebody that's in there that's qualified. Don't put it on another teacher that gets up and takes her kid to another school and is fighting a mask and all the other crap that's going on in the classroom.
Sir.
I don't understand. I know. I'm sorry.
No, I apologize.
But you are saying one thing and doing another. But I could tell you, your money follows your convictions. If you value your time, give it your time. If it's your money, you give of your money.
Sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Alexander Vargas, followed by Robert Cosgrove.
Good evening. I'm Alexander Vargas. I'm 17 years old. I'm a student, a child. Yet I get called perverse by people who stood in this very room while others stood by and said nothing. I'm a child, yet I get compared to a pedophile because of my transness, my gayness, parts of me that hurt no one. I'm a child. I didn't choose to be transgender and gay. I didn't choose to go to school every day and hear people scream faggot in the halls. I don't choose to sit in class and have people debate if I should have rights. I don't choose to fear simply going to the bathroom, but I have grown used to it. I should be proud of who I am, but I get mistreated and feel like I have to hide, but I won't. I won't because LGBTQ students exist. In Florida, 18.2% of high school students identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or questioning, and 1.5% identify as transgender. Our community faces struggles every day for being who we are. 1 in 2 transgender students and 1 in 5 lesbian, gay, and bisexual students attempt suicide. We deal with hearing about hate crimes on our community. Another gay person shot, another trans woman murdered. This is why we need to not only spread awareness, but also teach. LGBTQ people have a history. The Stonewall riots in 1969 that were started when Marsha P. Johnson, an African-American genderqueer woman, threw that first brick. When patrons of a gay bar were being arrested just for being gay, that brick that our community builds on. She fought back, and it is my turn to place a brick in this foundation. We deserve to be respected like any other student, and we should not have to feel ashamed of being who we are. If we teach students to be kind and respectful, then LGBTQ students would be less afraid, less ashamed, and we will feel safer. It is time to stop turning a blind eye to the issues faced by LGBTQ students. It is time to take action and teach. Having a true LGBTQ Awareness Week would be a good start. It is simple. Just a week that teaches a bit of history and kindness. It does not hurt anyone. It is simply teaching people to be respectful. I want to build a foundation for future LGBTQ students. This is just one brick. The idea that if we teach students now to tolerate and to accept, then maybe there will be fewer murders, fewer shootings, and fewer hate crimes, and fewer children committing suicide. Thank you.
Thank you. Robert Cosgrove, followed by Dana Dunmire.
Thank you. My name is Robert Cosgrove. I'm from Port Orange. I'm a resident and taxpayer there. I come here this evening to address this issue of the LGBTQ problem that you paint as a problem. This has been with us for many years. There's no question about that. There was a fine presentation made by one of the employees saying what the school district has attempted to do and will continue to attempt to do, which I take it to mean that they have not been attempting to do in the past. This is something new. That's what you could walk away from this. I'm particularly concerned that last week, you ladies and gentlemen took a position that you reversed today. And I wonder if the reason that you took that change of heart was because of a newspaper report that would, please let me finish, of a newspaper report that was published by a failing near bankruptcy newspaper with an incompetent reporter giving inaccurate information. One of those pieces of inaccurate information was just espoused here. 18.2% of students are in this category. I don't buy it. You shouldn't believe it. Where did this information come from? From the Center for Disease Control. In 2015, the Bureau of Labor and Statistics says that's not true at all. It was 2%. So to, you know, ladies and gentlemen, there are, excuse my language, there are lies, there are damn lies, there are statistics, and there are politicians in the order of increasing inaccurate information. So to believe these things when we have no other information to support that, it's just simply irresponsible. I'm particularly concerned that the superintendent of schools did an end run around you people on his school board when he brought this thing back to your attention again. You make policy. He carries the policy out. He is not the policymaker. You are the policymaker. You're elected to do that. You're failing when you do the things you do. I wonder how many of you are sitting here as board members, changed your mind because you didn't like the feedback that you were getting from these newspapers and from the public. This young lady put on a solution. It's a solution in search of a problem. If these students are being bullied, and some of them are, that needs to be addressed. We have bullying policies. Our educational foundation in this country was founded on equality, not on diversity. Everyone is to be treated equally. There's no question about that. That's what needs to happen in our educational system. We don't need to have identity politics. And when you do this, that's exactly what you do. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, sir. It's Dana Dunmeyer, followed by Lisa Alexander.
Good evening. I'm Dana Dunmeyer. I live in Orange City. I came here tonight to express my disappointment that the board failed to pass the LGBTQ health resolution at the last meeting. And I was pleasantly surprised by the change. I was concerned, what prompted me to come is that I was concerned about how LGBTQ students felt when the resolution didn't get a second. I was also concerned that the board had created confusion among principals, teachers, counselors, parents, and others about whether the board supported actions to support and protect LGBTQ students. Ms. Rowland's statement and Mr. Colon's comments as well went a long way, and I congratulate you for that. I'm a little confused about whether her statement is the board's policy. I suggest that it be distributed to show that it is to all principals, counselors, and teachers, along with the resolution. It's a good inventory of what you're doing now. My plea would be do more. There have been statements here tonight that LGBTQ students don't need special consideration. I strongly disagree. Mr. Colon cited some of the statistics. The challenges LGBTQ students face are great. You have heard testimony of that tonight. Please keep this in mind as you are implementing your policies and programs and providing resources. The comment that there were one counselor to 700 students gave me real pause. And I strongly recommend that something be done about that so that we can deal with this concerning situation. Thank you very much. And I also will mention that I support masks. Thank you.
Thank you. Lisa Alexander, followed by Amber Scott. Good evening.
Good evening. I'm Lisa Alexander. I come from South Daytona, and I teach at Seabreeze High School. COVID is disrupting so much of our lives, and although we are adapting to the new normal, there is only so much time in the day to meet the numerous expectations placed on students and teachers. Even the state of Florida recognizes that this year requires a bit of extra support for people who may be struggling. The state mandated 8 hours of mental health training for students. Helping students to recognize and understand some of their feelings and know that support is available to them is invaluable. But what about my 8 hours of instructional time? I broke my contract and I spent outside of working hours viewing the video so that I would be prepared for the students that I would be sharing the information with, especially since I'm not a trained counselor. But those 8 instructional hours, I can't get them back. So what's more important right now? Patients' grace and mental health or testing? While they are not mutually exclusive, there is only so much time and inflexible timeline in which to accomplish the county's goals so we can test. This year in U.S. history, we were given no testing reprieves. In fact, we got an additional test that's a required, a required midterm exam. We also have 8 required district interim assessments, and I have to give at least one assessment for every unit we do. So we are now talking about 17 days of testing only with no learning going on. Adding insult to injury, many of the students are making up old tests, and those folks tend to be the least likely to be able to miss instructional time. We also have lose instructional time to fire, live shooter, and other drills. And we need the instructional time, not endless assessment. I was visited by the Learning Walks several weeks ago. They were looking for learning objectives, student engagement, and whether or not you were up to date for the breakneck speed of our curriculum calendar. I watched Dr. Fritz's video. He said that the feedback provided through the learning walks aligns with our goals and mission. You mentioned that you have a plan, but I don't know what that plan is. I will tell you that it would be great if every school in Volusia County is an A school. But the only feedback I received was from the district person who said, good job. Where is my academic, specific academic feedback that would help me to be a better teacher? Although I directly asked about the feedback, I still have none. How is the unenlightened observation of teachers improving our lot? What is the purpose? I learned nothing through the learning walk. Ladies and gentlemen, neither students nor teachers improve if there is only time and proclivity for testing and evaluation, not learning. I thank you all for your time.
Thank you. Amber Scott, followed by Dr. Macklin.
Hello, everyone. My name is Amber Scott, and I'm a chiropractor that serves children, women, and families in Volusia County. As a chiropractic physician, I'm responsible to diagnose and treat disorders of the nervous and musculoskeletal systems. Since the mask mandate in school, I've seen an increase in headaches, neck pain, ear pain, acne, dehydration, and the most detrimental and crucial consequence of COVID and mask wearing are an increase in bullying, depression, anxiety, and learning complications in children. We should ask ourselves, are masks effective? We've been wearing them for about a year now, and there seems to be no scientific proven success. There are schools that do not have mask policies and have remained healthy, stable learning environments for their children throughout this COVID season. Research that's out there is questionable at best when reviewed from a peer-reviewed standpoint. For example, there's something called the inoculum theory. It states that if everyone wears a mask, it will reduce the number of viral particles that are naturally escaping with breathing, leading to not a decrease in COVID contraction, but only a less severe case if you do contract the virus. Another is that breathing humidified air is good for you. Think about these young children breathing in a natural waste product for hours upon end in a classroom. Masks are distracting for kids, especially young kids in a learning environment. Kids do not even wear masks appropriately, especially not for the whole day.
School-aged children depend on facial, especially young children, depend on facial expressions for an emotional connection throughout learning. I have seen firsthand kids who have been spun around without stability from home online learning to back to brick-and-mortar schools and back again. They're suffering from an increased rate, again, of anxiety, depression, learning difficulties. I just ask that you give children back a sense of normalcy and a less distracting learning environment by simply making masks optional for these children. I also definitely support them having more tickets to graduation after seeing the tears shed from these poor children in this school district. Thank you.
Thank you. Board members, we need to take a break for a few moments only because I've received a message from our technical team and we are frozen at the moment and they need a few minutes in order to get us back on line. So I do apologize, everyone. We're going to take a 10-minute break, or 9 minutes, actually. We will be back in here at 8 p.m. to continue with the public input so that the technical team can bring us back up. Thank you. If I could please have everyone return. We're going to continue at this time with the public input. Dr. Macklin, followed by Jennifer, I don't want to mispronounce it, Sakanti. So is Dr. Macklin here?
I think she's sitting out there.
Dr. Macklin, Michelle Macklin.
I think I saw her sitting out there.
Okay. Okay. Then Jennifer Sakanti, and I believe
she's outside.
I believe Jude put two cards in. The child that spoke first.
Jennifer Sakanti was just outside.
Okay. Then is it a Jennifer Sakanti?
Sakanti. She's out.
Sakanti. Thank you, Mr. Klein.
She's just there.
Okay, then Annika, if I pronounced it correctly. Can you pronounce your last name for me?
Dugo.
Dugo, okay. Welcome.
Oh, sorry. Thank you.
You may begin.
Good evening. I'm Annika Dugo, a gender-fluid IB student at DeLand High School and a member of its Gay-Straight Alliance Club. I was notified of what transpired at the last board meeting by an ally who sent an article that summed up a wasted opportunity the board took due to a small few who were misinformed. The only cure for ignorance is education. And as the Volusia County School Board, you have the ability to educate yourself and influence the education of others. By abandoning this week of awareness for the health of LGBTQ+ students, the board reiterates that they do not care for these students. By abandoning this week of awareness, the board ignores the risk and lack of support these students face. Students like me have a higher chance of committing or contemplating suicide because they feel isolated and face oppression daily. According to the Netport Academy, a treatment and rehabilitation center for adolescents, report that 1 in 4 suicidal teens are part of the LGBT community and are 5% more likely to attempt suicide than their heterosexual and cisgender counterparts. I am one of many students that fall under the statistics. I fortunately have the support of my family and doctors. However, there is nothing the school board does for students that lack support. Why? Are their lives and futures not worthy in this district? They are. But why is their health at risk, and why is nothing being done about it? By adopting a week in the near future when students are in session, there can be that is dedicated to the health of LGBTQ+ students, a conversation can be started among all students and those who are not aware of the risk their peers face in a safe place with educators. Jimmy Haynes states that politics is no place for a school, but the health of students is not political. So why should the health of LGBTQ plus students be considered controversial? As students with a higher risk and danger of hate to others, all should be aware and keep an open mind, a trait that IB instills in their students and candidates like them. Open minds change lives. I thank the board for this opportunity to share this evening and implore you to reconsider your responsibility to the students, of this county. Thank you.
Thank you. Kim Short.
Good evening. I wanted to talk about some legislation that Ms. Muller had brought up some legislation today during the workshop, and I wanted to add to that a little bit. There is a House Bill 1007 and a Senate Bill 1358 that'll change how timeshares are assessed if it's passed, and schools, counties, and cities could lose about $170 million a year in property taxes. There was an article in the Orlando Sentinel yesterday about it. I would like to ask the board to support a couple things that Florida PTA is supporting. Senate Bill 48 and House Bill 7045 we are against. I know that we did, hear a little bit of discussion on that today. It is being hyped as a simple streamlining of all the current programs and an enhancement of parental choice, but here's what it really does. It expands scholarship eligibility while combining the McKay and the Gardner scholarships under one program, and the Florida Tax Credit, Hope, and Family Empowerment scholarships into another program. And that's specifically Senate Bill 48. What I don't think people understand is that it reduces the financial oversight of scholarship managing organizations. Currently, we are auditing any organization that takes these scholarships annually. What will happen underneath this legislation is that it will go to every 3 years. That is something that, regardless of how you feel about the scholarships, I can't see how anybody would be in favor of us lessening any kind of accountability. So that's something that I'd like to have the school board support in saying no to. Senate Bill 86 is the Bright Futures bill that I'm sure everybody here has heard about. The school district of Palm Beach County has called to action against Senate Bill 86. I'm trying to pull every string I can to get people to vote no for it. I'd really like to see this board stand up and also say that they're against this this legislation. These kids deserve to have some consistency, and Tallahassee making changes to the way that we help our students is not something that is good for students. There's also House Bill 359 and Senate Bill 86, which is the COVID-19 Impact on School Accountability Bill. That is something that Florida PTA does support, and I know that this board does also support. There's something else that I would like to talk about, and that's Senate Bill 358. I know I have a couple seconds. 358 and House Bill 1119. And this is going to require that schools ask students if they can swim and point parents to free or low-cost programs if the answer is no. There are schools in other counties, and I know even in this county, that do work with the YMCA to provide some kind of a swim program for their students through PE. I have my good friends in Pinellas County. It's something that they do every single year. I have tried, and I'm here to try again, to get this county to do it with all of our elementary schools. I think that it's doable, and I think it's the right thing for kids. If we care about safety, and we most certainly say that a lot, this is something that affects, more children die from this than anything else. So that's it. That's kind of my little legislative update. Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, that ends public participation. We're going to move into board action item 16.02, authorization to implement custodial pilot program for the fiscal year 2021-2022. Dr. Fritz.
And we'll turn it over to Mr. West.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Dr. Fritz. As we actually presented to you this afternoon at our board workshop, the district is proposing to pilot an in-house custodial operation at the 15 selected schools in the district to compare the difference between outsourcing and in-house custodial services. We've gone through that program, and I appreciate the input that you have given us at the board, and we look for and are excited about moving forward with this pilot program.
Superintendent recommends the approval of the proposed custodial pilot effective July 1 of 2021. Sorry, my glasses fogged up. And run through June 30 of 2022.
You've heard the recommendation of the superintendent regarding the custodial pilot program. Do we have a motion?
It is with great pleasure that I make the motion that we begin our path into having in-house custodial services once again.
It's an equal, with an equal amount of pleasure. I second the motion.
And I'm sitting in a spot where I can't do either, did I? But thank you. Mr. Colon has made the motion. Mr. Persis has seconded the motion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Discussion? Aye.
We discussed it earlier.
Your vote counted.
Okay. Good.
Do we, any? Nay. All right, is there any discussion?
Can't wait for it.
Thank you.
We are excited.
We are
start hiring tomorrow.
All right. Moving on to item 16.03, adoption of school board policy 307, student progression plan.
Ms. Rowland and Mr. Penley, please come forward.
We are here tonight to get approval for our student progression plan. We presented it back maybe 2-3 months ago for advertisement. It has been advertised, and we're here today just to get approval to move forward with our student progression plan. Yay.
Superintendent recommends the adoption of the proposed amendments to the school board policy 307, the student progression plan.
Do I hear a motion?
Move approval.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, so Mr. Persis has made the motion that we approve the student progression plan. Mrs. Burnett has seconded it. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any discussion? You're approved. Thank you very much. Moving right along. Item 16.04. Board, you know what? I didn't ask for public input. Do we have any public input? You would tell me, right?
She will tell you. She will tell you.
Okay.
Kelly would have been on.
We're moving forward to 16.04, board action item, approval of resolution 2021-19, declaring property as surplus. Do we have any, Ms. Schultz, do we have any more public input? All right.
All right, we have Ms. Doster and Mr. Grube sitting next to Mr. Penley. Ms. Doster?
I'm not on this one, am I?
No, you're not, sir, but I just thought you wanted to stay there at the table.
Go ahead, stay around.
Can't vote to be on camera. I thought we
were. There may be a question or two.
I was willing to relinquish my time to Mr. Penley. Good evening, Madam Chair, school board members, Dr. Fritz. We're here tonight to present resolution 2021-19 to you for approval. It's titled Declaration of Property as Surplus. We have Stephanie Doster is going to give the presentation tonight. We also have some FDOT support in the back raising their hands. If there are any questions of a technical or engineering nature, they're here to support the resolution as well. So I'll turn the presentation over to Stephanie.
Thank you, Steve. As Steve mentioned, we have We have resolution 2021-19, which proposes to deem portions of property at Myrtle Avenue adjacent to New Smyrna Beach Middle School as surplus or unnecessary for educational purposes. This is being initiated due to a portion of the St. John's River to Sea Trail Loop, or River to Sea Loop Trail, being installed along Myrtle Avenue in front of New Smyrna Beach Middle School. This is being constructed by FDOT, and it spans, this whole project, I should say, spans between Volusia County, Flagler County, St. John's County, Putnam County, and Brevard County, as you can see here on this map. The different colors show the different phases of this project, and our project is in purple, and it is a pre-construction funded portion of the project. And you can see here, the green comes up out of the south where it has been this trail has been completed from Brevard County through Edgewater. It pops out at 10th Street, and where you see the purple there in front of New Smyrna Beach Middle School, that is their next phase. And you can see here, it's a little covered up by the screen in the corner, but this is what they are, this is the amount of property that they are proposing to use. It's about 16,000 square feet, and it's along, as I said, the frontage of New Smyrna Beach Middle School. If the board chooses to donate this property, they must deem it as unnecessary for educational purposes through this resolution prior to the donation. And if the board does choose to move forward with the resolution to surplus the frontage and this approximate 16,000 square feet, we will come back with a more formal presentation on the project with a memorandum of agreement between the board and Florida Department of Transportation and the City of New Smyrna Beach. So with that, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. And if I cannot answer them, I do have representatives from the project here to also answer questions.
May I speak?
Yes, ma'am.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
This is Linda Cuthbert. You're talking about the, I guess, the water across the street from New Smyrna Beach Middle School, correct? That is fenced by school fencing?
No, this would be property along the frontage of New Smyrna Beach Middle School.
Can we?
It would
so
be.
Is this the sidewalk in front?
And yes.
We have our fencing, and then there's a little tiny strip of grass in the sidewalk in the street. So, what are we deeding to the city?
So through. Throughout the,
because this wasn't a part of the agenda, so I don't know if she can even see.
This was an attachment on the resolution. This is Exhibit A.
It's on there. Well, see, I'm looking at the picture,
okay.
And you have it in blue. That's
yes.
Being deeded.
Yes. And that is directly adjacent to our right-of-way at New Smyrna Beach Middle School. So they would need, as you can see here, to the south, 13 feet, then it goes down to 5 feet. This is all property that is currently within our fence. This is property that they would need to acquire to improve this trail or the sidewalk that is currently there to improve it to the trail standard.
Okay, so we are deeding our own property that is just on the other side of the front parking. How is this going to affect the renovations maybe the reconfiguring of the stacking of the parking in the front?
So this will not interfere with the current renovations taking place on the property. This part of this project includes rainwater retention and underground infrastructure, landscaping, and the sidewalk. right now part of the current construction that the school board is starting does not include reconfiguring the parking lot. I know that is something that has been of discussion, but that is not part of the current project. But
okay.
I am considering that. I have considered that with this proposal from FDOT, that we are just moving in slightly in that area, and it would not, I mean, I haven't seen a design for the proposed new parent loop, but it does not seem that it would impede any changes on our property.
Will we have to move fences?
We will be moving fences.
At whose cost?
FDOT.
At pardon?
Florida Department of Transportation.
Okay, so they will be paying the cost.
Yes.
And that includes the water retention area across the street?
I think they will be tapping into that water retention area across the street with a underground infrastructure drainage system, and that will actually benefit our property, which currently does hold a little more water than it should in that area along the sidewalk and in that parking lot. But that will be part of their discovery process. It will be part of their permitting with St. John's Water as well. But yes, that is the intention, is to tap into that retention area to help flow into the larger retention across the street.
Okay. So, Mr. Group and Mrs. Doster, you see this as a plus for the school itself and for Volusia County Schools? This will not hinder any activities or any renovations? Any renovating plans that are going on at East Front of Beach Middle School, correct?
That's correct. It will not impede or interfere with anything we're doing there. And like Stephanie said, it will benefit the district in the long run, especially from the water retention standpoint. That will improve that situation on the lower part of Myrtle Avenue is where all that retention water will currently, where that will run to.
Okay, I just don't want to incur any additional costs for the district for us deeding this to the city of New Smyrna. If it helps the flow, it benefits our county and county surrounding us, I think that's beneficial. I just don't want that middle school to take any bumps because of it. But thank you for the reassurance.
When the project is completed, the responsibility of maintenance of the trail and the landscaping outside of our fence and all infrastructure outside of the fence will be to the city of New Smyrna Beach. So
okay.
The improvements will benefit our students, will benefit the walkers and the bike riders in this area.
That's wonderful. Thank you both very much, and I appreciate your patience. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Haynes.
You're welcome. Mr. Persis?
Yeah, I was wondering, would you mind, Madam Chair, if someone from FDOT came to the dice?
Could we ask him to come to the front to join us?
Good afternoon. My name is Xavier Joseph. I'm with Florida Department of Transportation, and I'm the FDOT project manager.
Yeah, if you could just pull the mic a little bit closer, we can hear you a little bit better. Yeah, I'm wondering if you could just tell us a little bit. This is a pretty massive project. I think it's in five counties. Is that correct? And I don't know, 250 miles or more.
Yes.
And so, could you just explain a little bit about?
This is a massive project. It's a well collection. But what we're doing is not the whole project. We're just doing a segment of the project from 10th Street on Middle Avenue, from 10th Street to 44, which is a gap. We just That's just a segment we're doing. Different. There are different projects with this long rail. We're doing different segments. But we are doing just one that specific segment now.
So is it about halfway finished, or how would you describe it?
I can't say it's halfway as far as our project.
Right.
The whole project, you mean?
The whole project.
We like we said, we're doing segment by segment.
Okay.
We have done different segments. I think there was a sketch that showed all the segments that are completed, and if we could show that sketch again.
We can make up that.
So different segments.
Here we are, the first one.
So it starts in St. Augustine, is that what I'm seeing?
That is all.
Yeah.
Yes. I think I called the consultant should have more knowledge of the whole project. I have the consultant with me.
Well, I think it's just good. I just wanted the board to be able to see why they call it a loop. Mm-hmm. And I think as in terms of benefiting, just the fact that it benefit quality of life. Folks know, we always encourage people to get outside, exercise, walk, bicycle, families, adults, everything, and do it safely. And I think that's what this loop is all about.
So I'm Tyler Malmberg. I'm the engineer of record for this project with Newfork Engineering. We're a consultant for FDOT. This is one of two state of Florida major trail network programs that are funded that are in the Central Florida area. One is, of course, our St. John's River to Sea Loop Trail, which is the five-county loop trail. It will connect all the way from Titusville to West Volusia, Sanford. It's part of the Spring to Spring Trails network that a lot of, I think, ECHO money has gone towards over the past 15 years. So what's in green are the existing trails that have been built. The purple, our project, for example, is a 1.25-mile segment along just Myrtle Avenue here. It's fully funded for construction in 2023. The intent is to create a loop that both for ecotourism and for local folks, we can promote more outdoor activity as much as possible. A lot of these trail segments are being routed connecting existing features where people would want to bike or walk or otherwise. And so in this case, the middle school is right along the route, but we also connect in Daytona State College to the southwest, and the planned route would connect in with the downtown area. And there's a fair bit of housing along the way that we're trying to pick up.
Yeah, I remember I was on the council. Volusia ECHO funds were used a lot for that west part over there to just continue to build this trail system, this multi-track. Is that what you guys call it?
Yeah, it's a multi-use trail. And so it's kind of like eating an elephant. You got to take it one bite at a time. It's too big of a project for us to solve every problem in one sitting. So... this segment is one of the segments that had a more obvious solution to it, and the existing sidewalk that's there is in pretty poor shape. We have a lot of obstructions along the path, and so this is something that was trying to get fast-tracked forward and get in place because it has benefits for the whole loop.
Spring to Spring Trail over there. I mean, when they do it, it's amazing. It's wide, and it's at least 12 feet wide.
So to talk a little bit about what we would be taking from the middle school to repurpose here, there's an existing shallow retention area that the water would be rerouted into the larger pond. That retention area currently floods across the existing sidewalk in front of the school there and floods across Myrtle and flows down the street, and you get kind of a muddy flow on the side of the road into an inlet. So all that's going to be rerouted into a closed drainage system. The sidewalk won't flood anymore. We're going to have shrubs and a lot of ground cover and other plants. The landscaping has been designed with a splitter island, so the trail widens out, and we have landscaping in a central island so that we won't see as much of the parent pickup traffic parked on the sidewalk, which means the sidewalk can't be used. So as much as possible, we're creating a shade canopy and that protective envelope, but we needed space to do it. So we're shifting the security fence back. We worked closely with Stephanie and the other folks at the school board and with the FDOT legal folks to develop an agreement that we will put a temporary security fence in place during construction. We have a plans update phase that we will go through, so we'll get all the specifications approved by the school board. We will get everything constructed, get the final security fence constructed prior to removal of the temporary fence. Principal and another school board representative will be able to inspect. So we have a lot of assurances and details that have gone in to try to make it a good project for everybody. And, you know, some of the land area was actually, you know, designed with additional property being transferred so that we could fit that landscaping and those other features that were desirable, you know, to make it a better function for everybody into the project.
Yeah, I have full confidence they'll do a great job as they have done in other parts. I just wanted to hear more, so I think it's pretty exciting, and I think it's a good place for it actually.
Yeah, absolutely. This has been one of the better projects I've gotten to work on in my career. There's a lot more popular support for trails in these types of projects.
Oh, yeah, way more. So.
Mr. Klum.
And putting in roundabouts or something.
Hey, that was one of the other projects I had was Grand Avenue. So.
Wow, yeah, no more roundabouts.
No more.
Yeah, no, this one's a lot less controversial.
I'm sure. Will we try our very best to do this construction while school is not in session?
Okay, so that's the thing I forgot to cover, is we've agreed that the work in front of the school will happen over the summer. Our funding got pushed from when we first had talked about it, and so we've moved a year back, but we were looking at summer of 2023. Now it would be summer of 2024. With the latest COVID bill out of the federal government, they gave us notice that projects could accelerate. So we could be back in 2023, but that's absolutely the work in front of the school will happen during summer, and we'll coordinate so that there aren't summer school uses in that area that we would be impacting. The other thing that we have been doing is continuing to reach out to CPH, who's the design firm working on the middle school improvement plan. So as they're able to release information to us, we're making sure that there aren't conflicts between those projects. So that is something that we're aware of, and we don't want to create a problem.
Now, I do see an entrance to the school here. What impact or what will we put in place in order to protect the bike riders as they're driving through the entrance of a middle school at a given time? Or are there no entrances? Am I seeing that wrong?
There's a bus loop, there's two vehicular entrances, and there's the maintenance exit loop that's kind of the southernmost end of the sheet that you see there. I don't know that we have any measures for, you know, that are special for the driveways of the school versus other driveways along a trail. Typically, we set our stop bars and our stop signs for the intersecting driveway behind the trail crossing. We sign the trail crossing. I expect that you'll have crossing guards and other staff that are going to be present during your school hours in the area, but obviously not at every driveway.
So this is a middle school. We don't have any crossing guards.
My apologies.
No, you're good. You're good. You're good. I mean, you were doing good till you got there. I guess my, you know, and again, I could hear Pat Northey on my shoulder saying, "Reuben, what are you thinking about?" But she's the trail queen in West Volusia. But you know, that's probably my biggest concern, is to make sure that, you know, as you said, it's a bus loop. Is there any parent entrance there? I've never been to New Smyrna Middle, so I'm
sorry.
There's
a parent entrance there
on that same sidewalk.
We have four driveways along this front edge of the school.
And so FDOT has really, really thought this out well, because, I mean, having a bike trail and ecotourism in front of a middle school at certain hours of the day is...
Well, I think the intent would be the ecotourism would be directed more towards weekends, when you'd have Saturdays and Sundays and school wouldn't be in session. And it would actually be a net benefit, because now you have a trail that's in front of your middle school. So you have a state agency paying to improve your safe route to school for your kids.
I think it's a great idea. I'm just concerned with that entrance and, you know, God forbid somebody gets hit. You know, you know, we're putting a bike trail in front of an entrance of a middle school, which at any at those critical hours, both in the morning and the afternoon, it's, you know, parents are everywhere. In fact, they'll probably be parked on that trail waiting for their kids to come out.
Well, and that's what they do today, and that's why we're putting landscaping around the trail so that you can't drive onto the trail from the road anymore.
So, okay, so that's a good point. So where then will those cars... So right now they park in the front of the school to wait for their kids to come out. So where then will they go if it looks like it's pretty landlocked there? So where will those cars go in dismissal and...
That's an excellent question that I don't have an excellent answer for. I mean, I think that right now, we've had a lot of coordination where I've been told that this is a problem where they've tried to use police enforcement, and that hasn't been effective.
Mr. Colon?
The staff from the school have tried to engage the situation, and that it is a problem that they are unhappy with where the parents are parking and waiting for their kids, and they appreciated an effort of us dissuading it from this location. You know, I was engaged to design a trail. I wasn't engaged to, right, to solve that problem.
No, I
didn't. But, you know, the short answer is, you know, it's a problem where they're parking now. I did not find a better place for them to park, but I can take measures to discourage them from parking on a pedestrian facility. It's hard for kids to safely use the sidewalk when there's cars on it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's a bigger safety issue than putting a trail in front of a middle school.
And ironically, that's not, you know, your problem to fix and probably not a part of this conversation. However, nonetheless, it is going to become an issue when, you know, you probably have 20, 30 cars who park right on that little area now, like it or not. Where are those cars going?
There actually is a plan for that. I think Ms. Cuthbert was going to share that. She was trying to jump in, but there is a plan to move the parent pickup. Ms. Cuthbert, did you want to share that? Okay. There's an area off to, you can't really see it. You can kind of see where the trees are at right now.
Yes.
Ms. Cuthbert, did you want to address that, what the plans were?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes, I'm sorry, the lag of the conversation. I apologize. We are in the middle of a renovation at New Smyrna Beach Middle School, and I have been advocating to change that front parking to parent pickup. We can always reconfigure. We have land in the back part, the northern west part of the campus, that we can add parking for faculty and parents, and we can make that front area a little more accessible. We can use it in other ways. Mr. Groob and his team are extremely creative. They promised me, I've had a promise, the maintenance hub is moving to, that's on that southern corner that the gentleman was just talking about, is moving to New Smyrna Middle. We will have that extra space in there. So we have other opportunities before us. So I'm really glad. That's why I asked the questions I did at the very beginning, because I wanted to have a wherewithal what we were going to do. So this is happening really at the best time, because our project manager and our construction management company, as well as our engineers on the school site, will take this into consideration. And so I would love to have the engineer's ideas, at least have that accessible to our project managers so they can work together. And so we have that plan, so when 2024 comes around, it's a beautiful spot, it's easy, people can go in and out, and we don't have the dangerous intersections that Mr. Colon was referring to. So I have every faith in Mr. Grove's team to make that happen. Thank you very much, Ms. Haynes and Dr. Firk.
Thank you, Mrs. Cuthbert.
So, you know, again, I just now hearing that it'll be a parent loop, that's even more. But I trust that you all know what you're doing. I support the trails, I support the loop, so that's the non-issue. I just think we have a lot of work on our side that needs to be done, because at the end of the day, this is at the front of a middle school. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, whether we build a loop, which we did at Timbercrest, to build a loop for parking pickups because our cars were in the street. And I tell you, it's very heartbreaking when you get parents writing you because they got a $177 ticket because they were waiting to pick up their kids from school and were blocking the road. So, thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else have any questions? Go ahead, Ms. Burnett.
Was there ever an option of looking across the street for the loop?
For the loop?
For the trail?
So,
yeah, I'm sorry.
So there were a few reasons. The preferred alternative showed the trail on the west side of the street, one of them being that a primary user group would be our middle school students. And creating the need for all those students to cross Myrtle Avenue right in front of the school would create a larger safety issue than locating it at the front of the school where it's easy for them to access. So that was probably the biggest reason. As we get north of 7th Street, between 7th Street and Joel Street, which is a little unmarked dirt road, it's really preferable for the trail to be on the west side of the road. I believe we have 4 existing driveways total, where we have 9 or 10 residences on the east side that are fairly narrow in lot line and don't have a lot of setbacks. So from a location of trail perspective on that block, it was better on the west side. We do cross the street at that point, but it was the balance of safety of kids crossing from the middle school plus the rest of the alignment seemed preferable to keep it in the location of the existing sidewalk.
Safety's first, for sure.
Any other discussion? I want to thank all of you, and I especially want to thank you for coming up and adding the additional details and explaining this to us. I've had the privilege of going to New Smyrna Beach Middle School for a variety of events, and so I kind of understand the layout of where all the parking is and, you know, currently where the maintenance piece is that's going to be moved and all of that. And there is property there. And so, you know, and I support the whole trails piece. I think it's a wonderful opportunity for us. And I look forward, well, if in the event it passes tonight, I look forward to seeing the outcome of it. Dr. Fritz.
Superintendent recommends the approval of Resolution 2021-19, declaring a portion of the property in front of New Smyrna Beach Middle School as surplus, which will form part of the right-of-way for the Florida Department of Transportation River Sea Trail.
All right, you've heard the recommendation of the superintendent. Do we have a motion?
I didn't know whether Ms. Cuthbert was going to say something.
Cuthbert, go ahead.
I would love to make the first motion.
Yes, we want you to make the motion. Thank you, Ms. Cuthbert.
Thank
Who would like to second it?
I'd like to second it. Thank
Mr. Persis would like to second it. So Ms. Cuthbert has made the motion. Mr. Persis has seconded it. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? It's approved. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
We're moving on to item 16.05, board action item for approval of job descriptions.
Mr. West.
Good evening. Let me put on my HR hat here for a moment. So just like to bring before the board a number of job descriptions. There are a number of new job descriptions that are coming before you that actually are part of an agreement that we had with ASME, an MOU for electrical, mechanical, and refrigeration, plumbing, mechanical engineer. So we have those positions that are coming forward to you tonight. Also, along with the custodial pilot, the new custodian and head custodian job descriptions, and an updating of the guardian commander.
Superintendent recommends the approval of the resolutions of job descriptions that Mr. West talked about.
Board members, you've heard the superintendent's recommendation for the following job descriptions.
Move approval.
All right.
Second.
All right. Mr. Persis has made the motion. Mr. Colon has seconded it. Any discussion? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Then move forward, Mr. West. Thank you. At this time, we are at 17.01, public participation. Do we have any? Thank you, Ms. Schultz. Then, and well, we already did 17.01. We're moving on to 18.01 with no public participation. So we are at items from board members and the superintendent or board attorney for discussion, announcement, or approval. So we're starting with 19.01. Who would like to go first?
Madam Chair, I just wanted to call your attention. I left this pamphlet. I hope each of you got it. And some of the it's pretty cool because it's easy to follow. And if, as you know, any bill has to go through three committees. And it just sort of shows you where these particular bills are. These are bills that really relate to children, children's issues. And I just have it there for your information. And you can see some of the ones that I've already passed two or three committees. So that usually is a good indication that they will be there at the end. But I really love the one, well, I love a few of them here, but student literacy and the K-12 education, the homebook delivery for elementary students, which, as some of you know, is paralleling the Dolly Parton Imagination Library that, you know, sends books to children from 1 month after they're born, I think, to every month thereafter until they turn five. And so this would be cool. Just some good things, and just wanted to share that with the board. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mrs. Cuthbert, do you have anything you'd like to share? Mrs. Cuthbert?
Oh, there you are. Well, I did talk to the mute button when you okayed the pilot program for the custodial. I ran for office in 2014 because when I retired in 2012 from Volusia County Schools, that was the last year of our custodians, and I ran good 25% of my energy was to get the custodians back. And so I just wanted to say I'm so delighted to be part of this new pilot program. I think it's that Mr. Kraft has it well organized. We will tweak it, I'm sure. We'll look back and forth. You know, we didn't bring it back for the longest time because of the money and the expense. And it was difficult, but it's so good to bring our own people back. And it was kind of an interesting evening tonight when Mr. Johnson came back to Volusia County. We also added someone from Orange County to Volusia County, Mr. Shandoff, to our team. And so it's nice. I'm so lucky to have three of those 15 schools in my district to begin that pilot program. So I'm really looking forward to all of this. When you look back since the beginning of the year, we've been through so many changes. A lot of our changes have been very difficult to make. Some of them are difficult to keep. There's still a lot of, we've made some mistakes. We've corrected a lot of them. A lot of them we would still love to correct. But whatever we decide to do, I know our, listening to a lot of the public participation, I know that in all of our hearts, and everyone in this boardroom, and me at home, we all have one goal in mind, and that is to protect our students and to provide them with the best, safest, healthiest education we can give them. That is still our number one goal. We will always have the pros and cons, those who agree and disagree with us. We just have to stay true to our core and know that, you know, in the end, things, our problems will be solved. So as we move forward this last quarter of the school year, I think it's very important for us to remember our whole purpose is to see our students graduate. And I think it would be a good time to talk to Mr. Reckenwald again It didn't, if those quotes were accurate, these are not the quotes that we heard. These are not some of the conversations we heard. And I know that Dr. Fritz has told us that his conversations were not the same as Mr. Rechterbold has stated. So we do need to get this straightened out, I believe, as soon as possible. So I hope that within the next couple of days, our very level-headed superintendent will give him a phone call, and maybe we can get this thing straightened out once and for all.
You don't have a piece.
Well, I did have Ms. Haynes on the call with me, so she can attest to what I said.
Well, good. I'll give you the fly swatter if you want. But I do think that, our kids deserve a second chance if we can at all provide that. And I do know the Ocean Center is probably the best place to have it based on weather, air conditioning, safety, control, security, everything that's involved in all of this. Plus, it's tradition. We've been going to the Ocean Center since the late 1980s when it was first built. So I thank you very much for indulging me today so I can stay home and keep my foot up to heal. So I hope to be with you again on the 13th. It's been a long meeting. So I wish everyone a safe trip home. But thank you for listening to me and the lag between watching it on the computer and hearing it on the phone are two different things. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mrs. Cuthbert. And we were happy that you could be with us this evening over the phone and virtually. Mm-hmm. Okay, Mr. Klein, would you like to speak next? I haven't given you a chance.
I have nothing.
Okay.
What?
Mrs. Burnett?
Write that down. Just listening to some of the comments tonight, I do think that we owe it to our students and our staff to make sure that we do have appropriate use of counselors and that we have enough. The week that the school system has seen, we definitely need to make sure that we are dedicating time with our counselors so that they have the opportunity to appropriately meet with our students and the staff. Let's not forget the staff, because I know Atlantic, for one, had a rough week, and there's some staff there that's hurting as well. And we just need to make sure that we give them opportunities to talk to somebody and vent, and that those counselors have that job to focus on and not other jobs to focus on. So I hope that we can reach out to support them and that we have a better week next week for everybody.
Yeah.
I agree with you. And so based on, some of the comments that happened tonight about the meeting at the county council and the fact that some statements were made that kind of threw Dr. Fritz under the bus, I'm actually going to bat for him. First of all, I'm going to start off with Mr. Jeff Brower. He's the county chair at this time, and he worked very hard, I will tell you, on helping to move us towards the opportunity of getting more seating for graduation. He actually spoke at the county council meeting. He sent some emails and everything, and he kind of sent a very direct email that said it was time to open up more seating. And so Dr. Fritz did arrange for a virtual meeting, and he included me on that meeting. And I went into that meeting having been told what Mr. Rechtenwald had said at the county council meeting, which was a little disheartening to me that, he put it back over here and said it was kind of all of our fault for why there was only two tickets and everything. And what I will tell you in that meeting is Dr. Fritz was very firm about moving forward, and at that point, the only piece we were being allowed to move forward on was to move towards four tickets. But that was met with resistance, okay? But he stood firm in that conversation. Had he not stood firm, we had Jeff Brower on our side,
I think we'd still be at two tickets. So when I hear that they said, oh, well, it's, you know, our fault that we haven't gone beyond two tickets, that was, but I'd heard it prior to it. So I want everyone to hear that Dr. Fritz was very firm in that virtual meeting and requested at least four. And he said he also requested that we continue to have discussions as we move closer to this time. Because the thing about this is we are, you know, if we're renting the facility, we already have it. It's just like, okay, so can we update it now? And could we go to six tickets or whatever? And I am very appreciative because we have moved Taylor now away from the 8 a.m. spot on Sunday morning, and they're going to be 7 p.m. And I'm very thankful for that because that is a more reasonable time for those families and for the time that they have to travel and everything to get there. So, you know, I appreciate everybody that came and spoke tonight so that we could, you know, hear what the thoughts are and everything. But I just want everyone to know that Dr. Fritz stood firm to try to get us to four, but it's going to take some more pressure, I believe, on our county council and Mr. Rechtenwald to get us beyond that. Yes.
I agree. I think also that we might want to have representatives, everybody get in a meeting at once and stop this finger pointing. And when everybody is not at the same table at the same time, too many different opinions or perceptions are thought of. So I do think as time goes on, there's plenty of opportunity for us to increase those tickets. But I think that we need to have a meeting with somebody from every entity at the table. And that way there's no misconception of what is being said and who's saying what.
I agree with you.
And I do think that, you know, the smaller schools need to have a little bit of an opportunity to have more if there's availability, you know. But that's not my job.
I don't mind having this conversation. I certainly don't mind having that conversation. The deal is, though, this board has to stand firm if you allow one school to have more tickets and nine not to. Right. So what's going to happen is you have University who has 2,600 kids, and then you have Spruce Creek that's got 1,700 kids, and they say, well, we can have five and make it, and then you have University can have four, and then you have Taylor that could have six. And so the reason we went that way is because we really didn't want to, you know, the same argument Taylor's using, other small schools could use as well, saying we're not as large as University or DeLand. And so that's why we kept it consistent. We realized you could put more Taylor students into the Ocean Center, but then you open that up, and what we can't do is if we make an agreement to do that for Taylor, we can't bend on the other nine. You know, you can't go across and have a different number for every school. This boardroom will be packed. I can promise you that. So I can certainly address Taylor if you want me to. It's just the board has to stand strong when the emails start coming from the other schools.
So, Dr. Fritz, my question on that is, based on what I saw of the older contracts, is we had X number of seats, okay? So, like, say 6,000. And so they were able to do 6,000 tickets from the school. And granted, Taylor's a little unique because up until last year, they never held their graduation at the Ocean Center. Theirs was always held at Stetson, and the area was packed, okay? But in the past, it's my understanding is, you know, the limit was 6,000 tickets, and each high school, regardless of their size, basically took the number of students that were graduating and divided it into that. So it wasn't equitable in the past, you know, like, because DeLand University and Spruce Creek were larger, and I don't know the exact numbers, you know, that they got, but say they each at that time got six. Well, you know, Seabreeze and Atlantic, because they're smaller, could have had 10 or 12. I mean, because it was just you have 6,000 tickets to sell. I think where we're at right now, and trust me, I was on that call with you, and, you know, I appreciate you continuing to say, no, we need to go to four. We need to go to four, because they didn't want to go to four. Well, one person did not want to go to four. But my thing now is, if, like, even if we're stuck at four at this point, okay, because they're not budging, I think if we take whoever's the largest, which is a toss-up on any given day between DeLand and University, it depends on, you know, what the numbers are. But let's just say, you know, and not everybody attended, but let's just go with a number of 600. I think we're safe with 600, you know, students. And they're allowing four. That's 2,400, you know, parents or family members coming. So, you know, I'm open to, and I have the two largest high schools and the smallest. I'm open to the fact that if we say, okay, it's 2,400 tickets, or if we even say it ends up being, say, 3,000 tickets, that we divide it by the number of students, because that's how we did do it in the past. And I can fight that, like, because trust me, I'm going to get hit with the most, because
the other problem, though, let me share this, is the configuration between
it's the configuration. It's not the capacity.
They can't set up, like, if you set up for a group of four, you can't go to a group of five in between graduations.
You can't uncover and cover seats.
That's the challenge.
In the time frame, and you got to keep that 3 foot at least spacing around that hub of four, all the way around, in front, to the side, to the back, to the back side.
The only option would be to do Taylor, because it's at the end of the graduation.
Taylor is the end.
And that's the only one that's what I'm saying, but you couldn't do it for the others, because you can't bring seats in between graduations to set things up. You could at Taylor.
Well, you could take off the seat coverings.
I've actually,
you wouldn't have to recover.
You wouldn't have to redo it.
Actually asked for Taylor after being there last year and what happened, because I even talked to the tech guys, and I said, I don't think they filled even four rows. Like, so, Carl, you went first last year. And if you remember, the seats are spread out on the floor. And, you know, the students come in and sit in the seats. If need be, they go into the lower bowl, because, trust me, for DeLand and University, they filled the floor and the lower bowl, the students did, in order to space them out. And then the parents went to the upper bowl. Well, by the time we got to Taylor last year, and I think they were last year, they filled three rows on the floor, like just three rows, and maybe a few in the fourth row, like not even a full fourth row. But the parents were clear up here. And so what I've kind of already asked for them is, like, since they're the last group of the evening, why can't they move to the lower bowl? Because they were so far. I mean, that place just echoed.
I think we did make that adjustment.
Yeah, because there's nobody in there. I mean, it was sad. So
again, you would have to, excuse me.
No, you're good.
It's not that the Ocean Center, Ocean Center could do it for Taylor, since they're at the end. Okay, but it would still take more manpower to do all that. And then, like Dr. Fritz said, you'd have to stand firm on the other schools if they knew Taylor was getting more because they're small, because then you start getting, well, Seabreeze is smaller than DeLand, and this school is smaller than that.
Oh, everybody's smaller than the top three.
You know,
I need to be clear. It would not be my recommendation to give one school more than another.
Right.
But if the board says it's really that important, particularly you, Ms. Haynes, because that's your area, then, you know, the rest of the board has to stand behind it and say that we're going to support the four. Because, you know, what we said with the county was, we want to keep revisiting this if things change. If things start to improve, we want to come back and we want to be able to ask for more. That's still the intent. You know, that's absolutely the intent if things were to get better. If they don't get better, then we would have to make a decision. And what I'm just saying is, we would have to stand tough on this one. This is not an easy decision, because you're going to make some people, you know, you may make the folks at Taylor happy, but you're going to make nine other schools unhappy.
Yeah.
Well, what I'd like to see right now is, I'd like for us to keep going back to the county. And, you know, we went from two to four. I'd like to see if we could go to six, you know, as the next spot. Because then they can group it off and sit. Because right now they're going to have to group them off in four. They're not grouping it at all, because they're holding other events. You know, they've got a monster truck thing coming up and things like that. But, you know, I'm thinking if we could set some timeline with them of, like, we come back and meet, you know, by April 10th and say, okay,
or even April 15th? Can we go to 6 at that point? You know, leaving still enough time that the final decision will ultimately be made before they have to set it up for the way it's going to be. I mean.
So I think that, you know, it really is all coming down to semantics. And I believe what I, in hearing it, what the county is saying is we've agreed to go up to 2,400. Right, so 4 per graduate at 600 a pop, so that's 2,400. And then the school district is deciding, in order to keep it fair based on what you just said, the superintendent then is deciding, in order to keep it fair, that we leave the same amount of numbers. So what
it,
I want...
But it's not just the superintendent, because the board, the county did say once we set it up, we right. can't add and break it down.
No, so, I hear you. Yeah. So... when I think of most, like Deltona High, I think was, what, 400 graduates? And so that would take it to 6. So if we ask them to bundle them in 2s, so at that point, and again, I don't know what it would look like. I don't know what our actual graduation numbers are right now, so I'm not. But, you know, if we ask them to bundle it in 2s, then you could arguably, so... you know, because, and you know, I didn't watch any of the county council things, so I could totally see how they're saying, we're giving you 2,400, but you're limiting the amount of folks for whatever the reason, right, wrong, et cetera. So maybe we could look at, because, you know, again, I think at the end of the day, we all want most, as many people as possible to enjoy that day. And, you know, Brevard County specifically in theirs, denoted that it would be based on the class size and the size of the venue. So, in other words, if you had a smaller class, you obviously can have more guests, et cetera. And so I would, you know, again, I don't know the numbers, but I'd encourage you, and then if we're able to move up some, you know, and like I said to one parent who called me from Spruce Creek, you know, I don't know that, I didn't know at the time that a little more would even make a difference for Spruce Creek. If they gave 500 more, that might make a difference for a smaller school, but not for a larger school. So in order to take Spruce Creek from 4 to 5, it would require them to expand, you know, or from 4 to 6. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just something to explore. I mean, again, I think at the end of the day, for me, I'd rather have as many parents there as possible, siblings, et cetera, as long as we can do it within the configuration that we're set for, and that is a limitation. Yep. Last year, we had the same conversation. I'll never forget because I was walking around the lake. And, you know, the bottom line was we couldn't go from 2 to 3 because of the configuration. You know, they just wouldn't be able to do it. So, and I just... If we could explore what that would even look like for our schools, because right now we're saying anecdotally, you know, 3 schools will likely be, you know, at 4 and everybody else will be at more. We don't know this. So I'd be curious to see those numbers. Again, it's not our decision, but, you know, again, I think we all want families to be there. And if Jamie Hain, who's got the 2 largest schools, no, but again, we, you know, it's...
She's got the 2 largest and she's got the smallest.
And so, she's got the smallest. Yeah, yeah. So, but, you know, again, I think, I mean, you could literally put the whole town of Pearson, with all due respect, love our friends at Pearson, in the Ocean Center and still
there'd
not
be room.
Capacity. And yeah. What's interesting in looking at the contract is you have, you know, police, you know, it's the same amount of support that we're paying for, yet we're not taking advantage of that capacity. So... I don't know about you, when Wawa has the drinks at 99 cents, I get the biggest one. And so, because they're all 99 cents, so why would I get the small? Okay, and that's kind of how I look at it, you know. But I'd be curious to see, you know.
Well, the plan that I have and the plan going forward was to meet with the county again as the CDC starts to change and relax to see if we can get them up increased. I strongly do caution us to be careful about doing different numbers for different schools. You know, we would have to be very strategic. You're talking about rearranging time. So, in other words, you would have to start with your biggest configuration first and then work backwards so you get to Taylor, because you'd have to remove chairs in between.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. If we do it by twos, right. If it's possible to do it by twos, and again, I don't know this. I'm not a stadium computer.
Yeah.
But if it were possible to do it by two, then we could, if we had the capacity, we could go up by two more for, let's say, a Deltona High to reach that 2,400. Whereas for Taylor, you can invite the whole town and still have empty seats.
So the way I understood it, and I'll ask Dr. Barrio if he understood it this way, the way they were going to sell this, so like if you got four tickets and you were a family, but you were a family of three, you would sit there with your family in your pod. They're not going to put another person right next to you because they're not part of your pod.
Right.
And it's actually better to go with the pod.
Gabe, is that correct?
Pod.
Yeah.
So that you would be pod setting. So,
yeah.
I can certainly go back to the county and look at increasing everybody. Going different numbers for different schools will require changing of graduations that are set as far as times, because we will literally have to start with the largest and work backwards. And I hear what you're saying with the two, but you can't count on every two.
And it takes more space for twos because you're having to leave a wider berth around it. That's why the four is better, because like when you put the four together, then you just have that piece around it. But if you do twos, they have to spread out more like this. So that's why, I mean, my next goal really was at the end of the last meeting was, can we go back next time and maybe inch it up to six and then make a pot of six? Because when you make the pot of six, it's still just the same circumference piece around it. But when you go those twos, you have to spread them out.
Like I said, I mean, again, I'm not pretending to know the answer today. However, again, I think that a lot of the back and forth with the community is the semantics of the fact that the Ocean Center is saying, well, we're giving you 2,400 seats or whatever the number is.
There's no question that there's a lot of finger pointing going on. And I don't have a problem going back to the county before the next board meeting and seeing where we're at, to see if there's been any relaxation. We'll see what's happening with the governor and see if there's any reduction, and we can certainly do that. Dr. Barrio can set that up. I'd like to have, so that you are a part of this conversation, have a member saying, since you started it, maybe you or Mr. Persis or somebody that already opened the door at least once can be a part, so that when we get there, you can hear the conversation and you can help understand where it is we're trying to go. And our next board meeting is on the 13th. If we can get a meeting, Dr. Barrios, with the Ocean Center prior to that, I think the goals of this board should be that we try to go to six.
Agreed.
But we're trying to go to six for everybody.
Yeah.
And if, there's a point that we get down the road and this board says, Scott, we're okay standing our ground, and, Pearson can go to eight, but everybody else is going to stay at four. Got to prepare for that. I would not make that decision today. I would wait, because you're going to have everybody. I'm going to just tell you, everybody in the world, they're all going to come out. So do you want them to come out now, or do you want them to come out later?
There could be no limits by the time we graduate.
There could be no limits.
Well, and I think that one of the things that we're dealing with community-wise is the fact that, Bike Week just happened, and the community saw the county's response to that. Although arguably they'll say it was private businesses. Then we have the monster truck thing. I haven't seen any pictures of the cheerleading thing, but I'd be curious to see as some of these events are starting to engage. I can probably assure you the monster truck people didn't rent the place to fill the place up a quarter of the ways, and pay the same fee they would normally. So I'd be curious. So I think after some of these things have taken place, the vaccination, the change in the county and the state's position, this is just ever-changing, and it's what I said earlier to Fox. This is ever-changing. COVID is ever-changing, and we're committed to our students and ensuring we can get as many people as we can to celebrate with them. There's still a lot of time.
Yep.
And time is probably the only thing we really have on our side.
We can be consistent. I mean, I think between board meetings, we should, Gabe, one of our goals should be between every board meeting, we have a meeting with OC so we can come back and give a report where we're at. I would like a board member to be there with us. You can rotate it out, but I would like it to be important to be there. So that, you know, I say our goal is to try to get it to 6 at the next board meeting if we can. And based on some of the relaxations, Rose, I'm going to ask that, and Mr. Penley, between the two of you, you stay in touch with the CDC guidelines and what's being relaxed at the state level. So, for example, when the governor says events are open, that we have that information prior to going to the meeting with the county, so that we can walk in there with some evidence as we go forward. Okay? In fact, Rose and Kevin, it would be good if you could join that meeting with us.
And I mean, if we could possibly do this, since, you know, they threw out, well, there's different configurations or whatever, but I actually think maybe if it's possible for the next board meeting, if they can release to us, like, just even what the configuration's going to look like, and if we had the current expected high school senior numbers for each high school so that, you know, we knew how many each high school was planning on graduating. And I know it may not be set in stone yet, but, like, right, close enough. And we could actually project what the seating looked like, you know, and so, like, okay, so we're here at 4, but, you know, when you take DeLand High, this is what it's going to look like versus, you know, because I think the visual, because the problem is people have gone to the website for the Ocean Center, and they've just seen, like, what the total capacity is, not even understanding that, well, the way it's set up, there's not maybe that much capacity, you know, in it. And so I think it would be to our advantage if we're proactive and we can say, here's the numbers that are graduating, because that's the other thing. Everybody only knows about their school. Like, mm-hmm. they don't understand the other numbers. And then a map of what it looks like. And it's like, okay, so we've gone to 4 now. And when we group by 4s, you know, this is where we're at, you know, with those classes. And I find visuals sometimes, you know, help when they can actually see it. And
I do commend you, though, because you've been very, very professional in your approach to this. You really have. We've listened to CDC. We've listened to the Department of Health. We've met with the county. We've negotiated. We have not asked for anything more than what CDC has permitted. When they went from 30 to 60, we said, okay, it's time to go from 2 to 4. You've been very good in your approach. And you know as a board that at the end of the day, we're going to get to June, and you are not going to make 100% of the people out there happy.
Right.
It is just not going to happen. But you're doing the right work for our kids and getting it more and safe. And you know, we have agreed that, look, we'll go back and we'll keep checking and we'll keep pushing. And as things start to change, we're going to keep asking those questions. I think as a school board, that's all you can really do. You know, I mean, we can't open it up to everybody. And we heard, you know, I counted the number of speakers that came in and what their topics were today. And Kelly and I are going to start to do that because it's good trend data for us to see what topics they're talking about. We had 25 speakers. 5 came and spoke on graduation. 5.
Right.
All from the same school. So it wasn't a mass number. I think the general population appreciates this board working to get it from 2 to 4. I think they really do. And I think they will appreciate the fact that if we can keep working with the Ocean Center and the county, and they know, even if it never goes above 4, the board is going back and trying to make this work safely for our kids. And I think that's all we can do as a board. As a team, that's what we can do. We're going to put a best foot forward. We're going to try to make sure that we can do this safely. And we're going to have regular meetings with them, and we'll pull out the evidence. And at the end of the day, if we get it up to 6 or we get it to 8 or we get it unlimited, then great. If not, you've done the best job you can. I really do believe that. We're two better. Hey, we've got to celebrate that. We're two better than we were last year.
All right.
Right?
All right. Twice as many.
50% increase.
That's right.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, we're adjourned. Yeah.